Welcome to The Wheel Reads, a Wheel of Time podcast. Your hosts are Alan, Chris, and Ian. This podcast is safe for first-time readers with no spoilers. This week, we'll be covering chapters 32, 33, and 34 of The Fires of Heaven, A Short Spear, A Question of Crimson, and A Silver Arrow. Enjoy!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to season 5, episode 15, 109, 109 episodes. It just keeps on, ticking up.
What are we doing here? I don't even know what we're doing.
What year is it?
How encouraging to hear. Yes.
Never make it to 109.
I don't even know what day it is. I have a newborn. I'm running 100% on whiskey and coffee at this point. In that order.
Understandable.
So, yeah. As far as I know, we don't have any new patrons. I have not checked today. So if anybody,
well, you know what happened last time you did that? Literally last time I was on, that happened.
Yeah, I know. If anybody else has joined today, I will shout you out next episode and I apologize in advance. So,
if I find out about it before it's done, I'll shout you out first.
Maybe no patrons. All right. But we do have Dave, our patron on.
Dave now. Okay. All right. Yeah.
David. Yeah, we'll call you Dave.
Dave, I put my first and last name there for a reason. So, no, I don't care. It's not okay.
Next time we'll shorten it to like D Stack or something like that.
He's gotten too comfortable with us. He's joking right off the bat, guys.
Yeah.
My bad.
We enjoy it thoroughly.
And as always, a shout out to our other Bella tier, Remy, because you guys rock.
I'm not alone anymore.
Yep. So, thank you for coming back on, David. We're glad to have you. It should be a fun episode. So,
Special delivery.
Yeah. So,
Chris just got food delivered. We need to pause and recognize.
Like two of them. Yeah. Hand delivered. That is love.
What is that?
What are you eating, Chris?
I'm eating breakfast for dinner.
Ooh. I was going to say, they look like scrambled eggs. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Nice. I'm making a burrito.
That's fantastic.
Nice. So, giveaways. I'm sure by the time this comes out, there'll be giveaways going on. So go check the social medias. I have one in the bag. So when I record this, it's 2 weeks later by the time it comes out. So yeah, there's going to be giveaways. Go check social medias. It used to be like last minute. I'm recording, like trying to put an episode out really fast.
He's so proud to be able to say he's got one in the bag.
I am so proud. Well, I'm so relieved that like, the stress level is not nearly as high, because like when you guys like cancel last minute on me or like have to change the night and like I have limited time, especially now to do editing and stuff like that, I'm like super stressy. Now I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Well, we need to find a week where we can get one more in the bag. Then we'll really be fancy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then people will listen to us live and like, is this episode ever coming out? That's okay. As far as another announcements, we are like almost at 200,000 downloads. Like,
oh, wow.
Super close to 200,000.
That's insane.
I think we're at 190. So, and we average around 10,000 a month or so. So, a little over 10,000. So, we should next month hit 200,000. Maybe in time for TorinCon.
Right on that vein, actually, today, guys, I just happened to be looking up because I was trying to talk up my appearance to my friends, you know, and I found, I have no idea how like reliable this is, but I found something called Listen Notes. And according to that, this podcast is in the top 2.5% downloaded podcast in the world.
Wow.
What? Across subjects.
Crazy.
Yes,
that is
actually true. We are one of the most downloaded podcasts in the world.
Wow.
That's the kind of information you need to be sharing here.
Yeah, what are we doing? I don't know.
Why is everyone listening to us? I don't know. Okay, but thank you.
Alan's so humble. He would never announce that.
Ian is like blown away. He had no clue.
Alan has some idea of the work he puts into this. Chris and I, like we talked before, we just show up. So like, it just blows my mind.
It's all magic to you. Yeah.
Right.
Me too. Yeah.
Fun times.
Yeah, so congratulations on that. I found that out today. That was fun.
Yeah, that's actually, I had seen that, but I didn't announce it.
Just so humble. Yeah.
He jotted it down in the spreadsheet somewhere. You know, he's trying to get top 1% before
you. No. This is big brain plays. This is 4D chess. He waits for someone who likes his podcast so much to become a patron. Come on the show, look it up, do the work for him, and then announce it so it's coming from a reliable sort. I'm on you. This is a big brain play. I get it.
8 moves ahead.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
90 chess, dang.
Yeah. So that's exciting. So yeah, that's all I've got for announcements. Now that we've already derailed this podcast. So personal life. I got nothing really. I got a kid. I got three of them. So
starts to lose his luster after the second one. I get it.
It's a lot. So that's pretty much my entire life at this point is that, getting ready to go to the beach in a few weeks, which should be fun. Just going for the weekend. Cool. I think my wife and kids are staying down the entire week.
Get back to your family going.
My parents are going down. It's my parents' beach house.
Okay, so that helped. Okay.
So they're going to go down and hang out. I think her mom might come too. Cause I don't think my brothers are going.
Good.
What he's saying is he gets a week in the house to himself almost.
Yeah. Which is gonna be awesome.
Very in the lead.
Well, and if she has two grandmas in the house with her, she's going to have help as well. So, like, that's a good opportunity for both y'all to reset a little bit.
And there's a good chance that Ian and I are going to be road tripping down the JordanCon together. And if that's the case and we're doing that, I've been asking some of my mods on Discord about, like, should we just, like, listen to music or should I pick an audiobook that we should read? And, like, they've been kind of giving their two cents. So I'm not sure exactly what to do on the way down. Or just sleep on the way down because we're going to probably need it because we're not going to sleep the whole weekend. I don't know. We'll see. Take turns driving, sleeping. Ian, you can give your two cents what you want to do.
We'll talk about this more in personal life, but I've got a new whip that I can't say this too loud because my girlfriend might hear me, but I just dropped $5,000 in like audio everything for this vehicle. And I'm getting like the family member discount because I know the guy that owns the shop, or my dad does. We're going to take that vehicle and we're definitely listening to music. We're going to feel the music. In fact, if I turn it up to max level, we will become the music. It's going to be wonderful.
She's in, like, expecting a huge ass proposal ring, you know, engagement ring.
Did you get a big subwoofer for it?
No, only a 10 inch. Yeah.
So not going to like play like Cottonmouth Kings like that.
But I'm powering the rear speakers as well. So along with that 10 inch is 20.
Yeah. Old 90s right there going back for you.
That's just gonna be Cotton Eye Joe going through his 10 inch subwoofer.
Not Cotton Eye Joe, Cottonmouth Kings.
No, I was making like a play on that. Like instead of the legit, you have this. Yeah. Sorry. They can't all be winners.
Yeah, I'm doing the stereotypical. I just came back from deployment and I just spent $5,000 on a car. Well, on upgrades to the car. That's
better.
That's what we do. You know what? YOLO. It's true.
YOLO.
That is true. That is a fact.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So, Chris, what's going on with you?
T-1 week till I start till I'm done with the current job.
Nice.
And a week and a half till I start the next over at UNCC. I got the official letter today, so I'm ready to go. As a matter of fact, I've ticked enough people off in administration now where they have shut down my access to the internet on my laptop, and they cut off my card, so I can't get in the building without like buzzing. I'm still employed, but like I got this nasty gram on Friday, just like, you know, you're not giving us a month, so you're not going to be in good standings. I got that at 3:00, so then I fire back with, well, if you're telling me I'm not going to be good in standings anyway, then what's my incentive to come back here for the next 2.5 weeks to help you people out? Yeah. Because that's literally the only reason why I'm staying. Like, I know when the pay period ends and I only need 3 days in the next week and I get a full paycheck.
Ooh.
So what's my incentive? Why am I coming back? Because they were like, well, you know, you need to give us a full month. Like, you need to remain in good standings. You need to give us a full month. I'm like, that would be the case if I didn't already have a job lined up and if I ever intended on coming back to you. That's not to say I won't. But, you know, if I do burn a bridge, there will be many others to cross. I pulled a boss move on my bosses on human resource, and three people in upper level management. And then, you know, I got a response back like, we just need your clarity on your answer. Are you going to change your notice to give us the time we want? And I'm like, no. And you'll be lucky. I was going to give them extra days. I literally had told my supervisor, like, I have a few extra days to give me, you know, to give me a chance to relax before I have to go into a new job. But I'll help you out. I'll give you those days. Sure as hell, when I got the email, I was like, fuck that shit. Like, I'm not giving you any of that time. Like, y'all go suck a donkey.
They let you work. Like, in my industry, like, you quit, like, you have your 2 weeks, they get you out of there as fast as possible.
Do you know how desperate they are?
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, you've been hearing them talk about the job.
It's teachers, yeah, good point. Yeah.
Like, yeah. There, and then my next door neighbor, the very next day, decided he was putting in his 2 weeks, and then we've had, like, three teachers just be out.
Man, it's liberating when you know that they need you more than you need them.
Definitely.
I called my boss one time to quit. This is from my previous job, to give my 2 weeks. And I called them. I was like, yeah, so I'm going to give my 2 weeks. Just okay. Let me pause real fast. Is the person in the office next to you there right now? Or are they out on appointment? I was like, no, they're there. Okay. I need you to do me a favor. I was like, okay, close your computer down. Just go put that on their desk and go ahead and leave. It's like that. Okay. Yep. Get out now.
When I left that career field, Alan, it was a very civil conversation, but they did not want me to stay one more day. And they said in order for that to happen, they paid me for the next month, but they said, go ahead and don't come back. They were cool about it. They were like,
so it's not the money.
Well, they didn't want
they don't want you stealing client information, all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah. Right. I bet my job would be that same way because all people's social security numbers I'm juggling every day.
That's
right.
Why. It's
very kosher, but
they're like, get out.
For me, they're like, print anything. As long as you can, please. You don't have to teach anything because we're shutting down your internet. Like, we're going to shut down your computer. You can't get in the badge without, you can't get in the door without knocking, but please stay. I'm like, so I just glorified babysitter. That just kind of proves the point that we've all been trying to make for forever and a day. Like, y'all don't really give a damn about the content. You just need bodies in place. Gotcha.
Chris, I want to hear about the conversations you've had with your problem students. Have you pulled them aside and whispered to them, like, I'm gone in 2 weeks. That's not even enough time for them to do the paperwork to fire me. Your ass is mine for the next
I set weeks. My entire
It'll take longer than that to find your body.
I sat down. I was like, you guys realize y'all the fucking reason why people are quitting, right? Didn't say effing message. Y'all the reason why people are quitting. They're like, wait, what? I was like, y'all, like, you say you like us, but then you treat us like garbage and you act like little idiots. Like,
yeah,
it's not worth it being here with you guys. And that's why people are leaving. I was like, in the next month, at least three of us will be gone and it'll be your fault. Not all of you, but about a good 30% of you.
I hope you're pointing as you say this.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you're cool. Thanks. But you?
They know. Okay. They definitely know. And I feel bad for my kids that don't speak English that are really trying to learn. And I'm one of those few teachers that will pull up Translate and do my broken Spanglish with them. And like, I'm attempting to learn Spanish through them, but also using it to teach them. Like, I've learned how to say math problems so well in Spanish. And they're like, no, you can't go. Like, I bought these kids clothes. I bought them food. Like, I've done things beyond teaching. I've really become, you know, a staple in their life. And they're like freaking out and panicking. So I do feel bad for that. Yeah. But for those supervisors that are like, you're only a number, you're only a body, I'm like, I'm not going to, like, I didn't even go and work on Monday. I was like, I'm not going to go. We have a car crap out on us, so we're going to get a new car and you can figure it out. And then Friday, I probably won't go in either. And then we'll see about next week if I decide I want to go in or not, because pay period has already ended. I know I'm getting a full check. Anything beyond that's just gravy. So
I'm not going to go to my job anymore. So you're going to quit? No, I'm not going to quit. I'm just not going to go. I'm just not going to go anymore.
Like, Alan, you've been missing a lot of work. Wouldn't say I've been missing it.
Nah, not at all, actually. Now, if I'm being honest.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
We got a new car. I did say that. We got another Highlander. So
what year?
19.
Nice. All right, we're gonna talk offline. You, Mr. like high baller over here. I don't know what kind of lottery y'all been playing, but
it's called the I know how to refinance the shit out of things, and I know how to find the deals, and you know, 90 days here, refinance 60 days there, refinance.
That's one way to do it. Or you can get yourself like a 2018 Kia Optima by just emptying your savings account into a piece of paper and then handing it to a lady across the desk, and they give you some keys, and then you sad every time.
That's how I did for my 13.
That's what I did.
Kia's come a long way, but I was looking at the Telluride. Boy, let me tell you.
Oh, Kia, we tried that. The bucket seats were the only thing that stopped me.
Really? They got so many bells and whistles in there, and it's just nowhere near.
Did you like the Carnival, the Kia Carnival?
I don't know what that is.
I read about it a little bit. It's their minivan. It sounds like a sales event. Well, they say it's not a minivan, but it's got minivan.
It has a sliding door like a minivan, but it's like built like an SUV.
Yeah. Oh. But I mean,
they feel like the same purpose, though, right? You can put a lot of kids and stuff in it, and that's the point.
That's the point. But it looks like an SUV with sliding doors.
It's a soccer dad. Soccer dad.
Soccer dad.
Like that. Yeah. All right. Cool. Wait, I won't beat up personal life too much because we are killing the clock right now.
Say what you want, Ian. I've enjoyed our time together.
I'm loving it. So on that note, I also just bought a new to me vehicle. It's a 2015 Pathfinder that I intentionally got because all of the used Highlanders are so expensive. Yeah. Like, man, I need to know your secret. We'll talk later, Chris.
I got them to take $12,000 off that shit.
Had to be.
We got it undervalued.
Yeah, my 2015 has right at 80,000 miles on it. And we're able to work in because if you know anything about Pathfinders from 13 to 15, they had some issues. 15 was getting better, but worked in a good warranty at that price and all that jazz. So, you know, it's kosher. But a Highlander, same year, same mileage, I would have paid $10,000 more. Private party, I would have paid $10,000 more.
Yeah.
So,
value so well, though.
They do.
So
that's what Toyota, man.
Yeah. But then, like I said, I took my deployment money and I was like, well, I'm going to the audio shop. We upgraded this shit. And that's happening next Tuesday.
And now the Pathfinder has giant tires on it. It has a lift kit. It
costs as much as a Highlander.
It's about to. Look, when I get done with it, it's about to.
Last time you went on deployment, you came back and you had a brand new motorcycle and a Jeep with lifted up. Like, I was like, do you have like a regular car? Like, no, I just have fun cars.
Yeah, everything I own, you're required to wave at other people. I had waving vehicles.
That's fun.
Seeing you're doing it right.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then tomorrow I report to Fort Bragg. So we'll just.
It's weird. He opened up a gateway and he's in Shawshank. I don't know.
Speak of the devil.
Speak of the devil.
That's
good. Oh, like the segue. Yes.
All right. So moving on to chapter 32, a short spear. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's do this. All right, a short spear. And our symbol is the Shawshank helmet. It's a little insect looking thing. That's what that symbol is, if you didn't know. And if that's not a giveaway, then yeah. So
yeah, it is.
We start out and Rand's he's using the one power to create an exit of the shelter, and he's trying to still feel where the gateway is that he's blocking or holding open. Far away, and he pokes his head out, and right as he pokes his head out, something flies over, and he's like, there are people on that. This ain't good. I'm in danger.
Don't skip the part where you know, they were trying to prepare to leave, and you know, they're splitting up the blankets, and you know, he looks over at his lady and he's like, make sure you split those blankets evenly, and she's like, oh no, there's more of you to cover.
Oh,
you little hiney.
So, David, you might have been right about that 9+. You know, I mean, he's a tall boy.
He's a tall boy. He's the same height as Chris.
He's got some ground to cover. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we thought when I saw the title, The Short Spear, I just automatically assumed, like, we're going to learn the dragon reborn was more like a lizard.
Oh, no.
Oh, oh.
Avienda lets us know he was blessed by his father. Yeah.
Yeah.
She definitely isn't giving any indication otherwise.
Right. Yes.
It was funny because he definitely didn't realize the passing of time. Like, Rand's a stud. Passing of time happened. You know, he looks outside and it's daylight and he's like, oh my goodness, I feel like I've lost track of the year. Like, she laid it on him. Like, if a man loses track of the year, that
with no drinking involved.
Yes, that wings.
This is alcohol free. He has no clue what's happening.
He's on that
100% pure IEL shield maiden right there.
Ooh. His toes are still cramped. I bet you if you looked at his feet, his toes would be all curled up and shriveled. Like
regardless of the frostbite. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. It's gonna take him a week to stretch those bad boys out.
Shooting blanks for a week. You're right about that, man. Damn.
Well, the extreme cold will do that to you, apparently.
Yeah,
so. Apparently. And he's a leathery gray shape, far bigger than a horse, on slow beating, widespread wings with horny snout thrust out and claw before and clawed feet and thin lizard like tail trailing behind. Is that a dragon?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And thrust that close right after a sex scene. That really happened. I missed that entirely till just now.
He just flowed right into it.
Interesting. Yeah. And then, yeah, he's just like, you know, ankles and, you know, the in like the word bosom, but then he's just like, no, horny and thrust. All right, Jordan. All right, I get it. All right.
He did.
In my book, those words are like highlighted in, you know, italicized and bold and
everything. Must have been the previous owner. Yeah, I have no idea who would have done that.
Crazy.
Yeah. So this flying thing does kind of look like a dragon. So maybe there are dragons in the Wheel of Time.
Yeah, going back to what the first episode, it was the first few, you asked, do you think there's actual dragons? And we were like, no, that'd be like Game of Thrones.
Exactly.
But well, I'm still not,
when he saw the flag and the tattoos, they were like a creature they had never like conceived of before.
Sure.
So like yeah.
And
yeah,
there's still the possibility. So the way it's described, yes, I'm thinking dragon, but you're also think of what primitive people used to call airplanes when they saw that. Like they were like a giant fire breathing screaming dragon animal thing of the boppers. So maybe Rand just doesn't know how to describe. But then you talk about
it's just a 747. Is that what you're saying?
It could be an A-10 looking at
this. Oh yeah. I should have known better than just quote models of stuff to you. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're in Vanuatu off of Australia, you called them God because that's what they did. They actually worshipped. So like during World War II, the US was, they actually did end up building a base there, during Japan, fighting Japan, they airdropped lots of packages with food in them. So they flew over these islands and tried to, like, I guess, appease the tribal people.
Hearts and minds,
they
made, baby.
They dropped food onto the island, and by the time they showed up, they had built monuments of the airplanes, as gods had brought them, you know, food from heavens and rained them down. So they had created the entire, they're called cargo cults. But yeah, they actually worshiped.
Oh, wow.
They worship the actual planes.
This is why people listen to us, because Alan has these facts that like nobody else, maybe Ian. But Ian knows.
What category is this podcast in? Because you should just put it in like general trivia as well.
General trivia. Yeah.
Right. The sidebar conversation covers everything. I will say, Alan, they still teach in the Army, at least in civil affairs and probably other small teams type stuff. We have a small block of training on not becoming a god. They don't label it that way, but essentially it's, there will be times when you work with people that they live in very remote places, or they could be just indigenous and little to no contact. And they're very adamant about teachers now not to, you know, try and get statues made out of us and things of that nature. So
yeah,
that laugh wasn't a derisive laugh. That was just an I can't believe what I just heard laugh, like a whoa.
Yeah. I mean, I slept through that portion and I probably scored the lowest on that test.
That's the part I would have that's the only part I would have woken up for. I mean, dang.
Well, then fast forward 20 years after World War II, Vanuatu became like a tourist destination and they realized that Americans are not gods. They're all just asshole tourists. So,
it's like when you actually date the pretty girl from high school and you realize, oh, you really are just that vapid. Okay, great.
Yeah.
And mean too. Yeah. Wow.
Or you move into it with her and learn she's a slob and just throws her shit on the floor and her bathroom is disgusting. Ugh.
Oh, the bathroom. Yeah. I draw the line in the bathroom. I'm kind of disorganized. I'm not unhygienic, though.
Yeah, I've met hot girls with disgusting bathrooms. That is a no-go big time.
Oh, but then you get to be all like, I'll clean the bathroom. It's okay. And then you but think how much she's just like, oh my God, he's cleaning the bathroom?
Like, I think between Rand and Avienda, Rand would have to clean the bathroom.
All right, so flying stuff in the sky. All right, so
you were talking about Avienda. Come on, that's on topic enough.
Yeah.
All right, sticks his head out, hopes they didn't notice him.
And then it's like, oh my God, leave the blankets. We'll go naked. I mean,
yeah.
maybe they'd be friendly, maybe they want, but there are people out there and we need to hurry the hell up. Like, we gotta get out of here.
And Rand says, like, we need to do it like really discreetly so they don't see us. And like, he turns to Alvianda, like, are you gonna disagree with me? And she's like, I don't disagree with you. And he actually says something that makes sense. It's like,
for a wonder, she did not argue.
Like that, that was the change. She laid it down well. Like, she didn't open her mouth then. But yeah, so she was like, no. You, whenever you make sense, Randall Thor, I will listen and we'll go. And so, like, they step out into the very snowy area and they look at the different snow banks and they're like, huh, this is definitely not a land that we recognize because, you know, not too far off, you see the ocean.
Yeah.
Yep.
If the chapter symbol didn't give it away at this point, this is where I was like, when we were guessing before, like, because of the snow and everything, I'm like, well, it's got to be in a different region of the world entirely from where we're at now. And I'm throwing out, like, maybe on the other side of the Misty Mountains or Mountains of Mist or whatever they are here. But yeah, once they're talking ocean, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
How did she manage to get them here? That's, like, my number one question. It's like,
gateway.
Yeah, but, like,
her need.
Why there?
Her desire was to get
far away.
As far away as possible. She didn't want anybody that she was around, anybody that she knows, to have any knowledge of where she would be. So it would have to be a part of the existing world that all of the Aiel and everybody else just don't know about. So it kind of makes sense when you think about it.
Yeah. Not to mention, it's like the complete opposite of the place where she's used to. I mean, they're both can be because they're deserts, but I mean, like, if you're like hot sand, you kill yourself over a puddle of water, and then she's just like, I gotta get away, and it just pushes to the most extreme opposite of what she's thinking of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I never thought about that just now. I'm not like lecturing, I'm just like,
it's a great point. I did a winter in Wisconsin. I know we have some listeners from there and further north, and to me it was quite miserable, extremely cold. Like, mm-hmm. That doesn't even do it justice, saying extremely cold. And when we went to DMOB, they were like, it'll be a good idea to send you to El Paso, Texas, which is the opposite in so many effing ways. So then we go to the middle of the desert. It's like, so on day one, an hour into it, I got a sunburn. I just, standing in formation, waiting to figure out where my room was, I burned my neck. So yeah, I feel the transition here. It's kind of major.
Yeah.
Yeah, for real.
And with next paragraph, they notice that there's a group of about 20 people that's blocking their way. And two of them are wearing collars. And Rand knows right away what that is. He says, yep. Avienda, this ain't good.
So much for being discreet. Looks like they're hanging out right where we want to go.
I was thinking Juggalos, like ICP fans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's what was going on.
They just saw a magnet, and they're really confused as to how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what that was.
Yeah. So Rand explains what the Demane are to Alvianda very quickly. Says, like, yeah, they can channel. Can you block them? And Alvianda's like, please.
Please. Her level of confidence is like no other. Which is really funny because we have somebody like Nynaeve, who has all the power in the world, who has been through some formal training that, like, can't get it up and to go. Like, she just will not work when she wants it to. She's
got that block.
And then you've got Avienda, who's like barely trained in the ways, and she's gonna handle two tools of war on her own. I was very impressed by that. Like, character of the chapter definitely goes to Avienda. Like I was saying, Avienda is definitely my character of the chapter. Mm-hmm. I mean, she even took the spear, so
I'll give you a thumbs up on that.
And Chris, to just kind of roll with what you were saying there, think about it like this. She had her spear taken away from her. She is now a wise one. But there are wise ones who channel and presumably have guided her through the same thing that Nynaeve had to block herself for. Also, an accepted weapon of wise women is apparently the one power if you can do it. Avienda is stronger than basically probably almost every, if not every Aiel she's ever come in contact with. So she knows, even without training, she's got that confidence. She falls back on it. She basically, like, fixes her, like, maiden warrior training and confidence of, like, no, I know I can do this. This is my element. Yeah. And it's really cool, like you were saying, to watch her shift. This is, like, her actually, like, finding a home with her, like, new identity.
Yeah.
Because I feel like for a while, she was fighting it for so long So then the idea of her still training in it and taking it in, like, I know when I don't want to do something, there's a block. Like, yeah, I'll learn it, I'll hear it, but am I going to be invested in it? Do I think I have any confidence in it? Not really, not any more than anybody else, but she just quite literally is like, oh, I got this. This is no problem. Bet.
Yeah. So, yeah. David, I appreciate your perspective on that, but I'm still a little, I feel like there's got to be one more piece of the puzzle that we're not seeing yet as the reader, because everybody else that has transitioned into this new power, discovering things about themselves, even if they are super powerful, they've been so tentative about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the confidence level hasn't been there. So I guess maybe her being a maiden in that training the mindset might play into it, but
that's what I'm thinking. She's like translating it over.
Yeah. That might be a good explanation. Cause one of my questions here was, okay, we're seeing Avienda explode into this amazing channeler. And you say mm-hmm. better channeler than other Aiel. I say better channeler than a lot of Aes Sedai.
Oh, I meant her trainers as Amis who can channel will have probably mentioned to her, if she's not already aware, like, you're abnormally strong.
You're really good. Right. Yeah. But like, she's doing it with such nonchalant confidence here. I started thinking, all right, was there something else in Rudian she saw that she knows this is just a natural progression? Is it flowing?
Look at who her trainer is, though. It's Egwene.
Well, and probably a little Moraine. Remember, as they're traveling, she's getting a little bit from everybody.
She gloats on it. She's like, Egwene taught me to handle several flows at once. I can block them, tie those off, and wrap them up in a flow of air before they know what is even happening. Like, this speaks big time to what Egwene's really learned and mm-hmm. mastered in such a short time. So remember how we thought Egwene might become the new Amelin seat? Like, I'm going to go ahead and say, like, she's definitely got that. I think Egwene might end up becoming our new Amelin seat.
I think so, too. And let's jump way back. Alan's going to get frustrated. To the chapters of Swan talking about the type of person they need to get or to vote in as Amerlin, like somebody who's strong in the power, but also can be controlled by people and everything. And well, I mean, as you're going through that, why wouldn't it be Egwene?
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Even among the other like main characters you're saying, or like, are you just saying in general?
Yeah, I mean, Nynaeve, strong channeler, of course.
Yeah, you can't channel on command to be
right. And also attitude-wise, still she's not quite there, and not somebody that the Aes Sedai would even possibly control.
I don't discredit Nynaeve, because Egwene could become easily the new Moraine.
Oh yeah, mission focused. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then okay. Nynaeve can kind of take over.
What's gonna happen to Moraine?
Yeah.
Moraine, she's gonna die, but Rand is gonna figure it.
So we've got a dueling theory here. We've got right off of Tom in the Sunset, and then just die.
No, they're both gonna happen, because remember his frustration about not being able to bring that girl back to life, and Moraine saying it's impossible. Rand's gonna figure it out,
mm-hmm.
and it's gonna be somebody very significant that he has to save, and it's either one of his hometown peeps or Moraine. So I'm thinking Moraine. Takes one for the team, goes down. Rand brings her back to life, and then Tom's there to scoop her up if she like gasps her first.
And then she's like, "I told you in book 4 to stop doing that shit."
Yeah, right. That was so awkward. Haven't you seen Aladdin? It's not pretty. Like, you don't bring people back.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah. Well, after this plan is hatched, it works perfectly.
I actually had one last thing I wanted to point out about this. I'm sorry, Alan. Sure. I actually found that very, very interesting, Ian, that you were saying, particularly that you were surprised that she was able to shift that focus and confidence. Because I guess I would think, like, once a soldier, always a soldier. Like, if you're given a different weapon you've never handled before, and it's just kind of like, go. And you're like, okay. I know that, like, but you know that, like, let's say everybody you're gonna have to like deal with is just physically weaker than you by a lot for whatever reason, and you're like
five-year-olds, a horde of five-year-olds.
And you're like, okay, I've got brass knuckles instead of an automatic weapon. However,
I guess the only difference would be you maintain that honesty within your team, and right mm-hmm. now Rand is your team, and I know the dynamics are different. So, like, let's say you applied that to army soldier, whatever, and mm-hmm. there's things I'm proficient on that's not available, but I have the opportunity to pick up a automatic grenade launcher, which I can swing a Mark 19 all day long. So that's not a great example, but I would have that quick conversation with my team, because those are the people that literally are covering your ass and you're covering theirs. It's all right. I'm not entirely sure what the fuck I'm doing, but we're about to bring the rain down. All right. And then, you know, you get the motivation up of the team, but you're honest with each other. The people that you're literally covering.
Did you think that she wasn't being honest? Did you get that feeling?
She was pretty confident. Mm-hmm. Not like full on snarky, but when Rand was like, I need you to do X, Y, Z, she was like, yeah, got it.
You know what? You know why he probably felt that way? And I didn't think about this. So it's now, remember in when they're in the Stone of Tyr and Elaine and Egwene come to him and they're like, we're really strong. Ha ha ha. And he just manhandles both of them at once with the power. And so he's probably like, I have no idea what women are actually capable of, because
when he can't sense it, can't see it.
He can't, right. He gets goosebumps or whatever. That's it. You know, whatever. Like, I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? This was still fun and exciting for me, but yeah. A lot of questions.
So. So after they tie up everybody and weaves and block everybody, they go to where the gateway is supposed to be, and Rand can't see his weaves there anymore. And he gets super nervous. He's like, this ain't good. All right.
I thought someone saw his weaves mixed in with somebody else's.
Yeah, that he didn't put there. That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah, he sees a weave he didn't put there, which means it's a male. Could be Asmodean, could be another Forsaken, could be a trap, like not good.
It's a trap.
So he is definitely not. Yeah.
Well, I mean, fast forward to them jumping through it. If knowing everything that I know so far from the reader perspective, like, why would you trust that? There's people around it that you know are not looking out for your best interests. There's at least one dude, former Forsaken, on the other side that you can't be certain he's looking out for your best interests. And there's all these other Forsaken that could be affecting this in some way that you don't know where they are, what they're doing, whatever. And still you're just like, eh, we're going through.
Yeah.
That's a big roll of the freaking dice.
But I mean, go back though, and he's got two Damani. He's got two of the people controlling them. He's got a couple of generals. He's got a dragon overhead with a couple of people searching. And this is just like a small number in the search party.
Right.
So it's like between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah. And he does ask Aviana while he's stalling, trying to figure out, like, can you get these collars off? Because he can't do it himself. And while Alviana's trying to work at the collar, one of the Sanchin, her name's Lady Morsa, recognizes Rand. Like,
oh yeah.
Because she was at Falma. She's like, I recognize you.
You was up in the sky doing that crazy ass shit. Weren't you?
It's him.
Yeah.
So,
and then they start arguing amongst themselves. This whole scene. So what do you think about this whole scene? And you know, obviously they want to take him in. And they presume, just Rand presumes, to kill him, because he's heard stories that they killed the men who can channel over there. And, you know, that's
stories.
Do you think they have their own prophecy,
really,
or do you think?
Don't know. I was thinking exactly that when they said it's him. First, I was like, okay, so what's the prophecy? And second, you know, it was very convenient, but part of me believes maybe the Sanchin do indeed have some male channelers that have kind of like got this. Like, we don't know what they know. And maybe they do.
We don't know anything about them.
We don't know much about them. Maybe they're the society that does have some male channelers, and then people are spreading false rhetoric because they don't want people, the male channelers, to go and like convert to the Sanchins.
Well, male channelers go mad, so they kill them.
That's what they've told us. We haven't really. I understand what you're saying, Chris. We haven't dug in enough. We don't have great reliable sources about what goes on over there yet. There might be more to it, but. In a total twist of what we're talking about here, I couldn't help but think about my former prediction earlier about Matt somehow being the big head of the whole Sanchin movement, especially with the whole Daughter of the Nine Moons thing. You know, I'm pretty confident that Rand's going to break away from this, but this is already enough. Like you saying, Alan, you didn't say they have their own prophecy, you asked. And the obvious answer is yes, they have their own prophecy, right? And maybe just seeing Rand here and Rand and Falma, you know, it triggers events for them. And maybe the Sanchin don't end up being enemies. Like, it might take a while to get there, but maybe they become allies. And Matt is going to be the piece that kind of brings that together. So my mind started running towards Matt getting involved with his Nine Moons chick and somehow bringing that realm of the world on board with the whole Rand thing. might take 4 or 5 picks, but yeah.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Sure.
Now, does Matt stay on Rand's side?
Not initially. I think for a while, they might become
frenemies.
I'll say like reluctant enemies, like they find themselves on opposite sides, but the things that pull them to either side are stronger than what pulls them towards each other initially. And yeah, there's going to be some conflict there, I think.
Okay. So as all this is going on, they notice that the gateway is getting smaller. It's starting to shut. So this is what kind of is the catalyst that makes them have to decide now. Like, if they stay, it's going to shut, and this is going to hold forever. I mean, like you said, there's a small group. There's more looking for them. Like, they can't fight off the entire army, just the two of them. So
hold that thought. Rand can fight off an entire army.
He doesn't know that.
He doesn't know that, though.
He did it in book one.
He has only done it twice.
Oh, yeah, but he doesn't know it. Okay.
He's literally only like the end of the Eye of the World or anything.
Yeah, I get your point.
Yeah, he had some help.
I get your point, Alec.
They didn't have channelers there.
Yeah. Rand's like, I can only split. Yeah, I can only like grab so many people at once. I guess. All right, sure.
As Jake said, he did have a long night too. So
that's true.
He did. He did get up at work to not know where the fuck he was and what day it was. And how much
yeah, he had no idea what the year was. Chris pointed out.
That's true. Now that I believe he was out of sorts.
He was blinded by the light.
I've been in that condition before, and it's pretty fantastic. God,
it's a privilege and an honor if you ever do experience. Yeah. What's being the Dragon Reborn compared to that?
Yeah. What planet am I on? Honey, what planet would you be on? Earth. Hello.
We've actually never established what the planet's called. Oh!
Hey, yo.
Yeah.
Not in these books.
So they make the command decision to go ahead and jump through, and they go through, and it snaps shut right behind them. But right before it goes, because as soon as they get through, everything releases. As far as
that was the weirdest laugh I've ever uttered in my life.
Because you wanted to laugh at it, but also you did not want to laugh at it.
It caught me, but completely by surprise. I was like in the middle of yawning.
Oh no.
But right before it snaps shut, just the tip comes through.
Just for a little bit?
Just the tip. Need.
Just to see how it feels.
Just the tip.
You guys ever see the movie Teeth?
No.
No? No? Never mind. All right. Somebody in the audience might get that joke. Okay. Never mind.
Yeah.
It was relevant, I promise.
Just the tip comes through. Gets cut clean off, though.
Ugh.
Oh. Ugh.
Don't stop saying that.
God, I did it again.
That's irresponsible. There's four guys on this show right now, and you just said that like out loud, like it's nothing. I bet you every single one of y'all flexed a little bit and cringed. You did a little defensive. Yeah. I know, you lift a leg. Ha! It's messed up, Alan.
All right.
Carry on.
Before we move on, anything we missed from all this? Because now we're back in Kyrian.
Yeah, now we're on page 4.
Yeah.
All right. You guys, like... all right, so now you guys have experienced it with the rest of us. You get to just enjoy the fact that for Rand, at least he and Egwene were getting it on before the series started. Poor Rand doesn't lose his virginity for 4.5 books into this 14-book series.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
As exciting as I was, like, I was very excited about all of that. That's the Alan and I talked about this offline. Like, it was ridiculous that it took so long in the books. I still haven't really figured out why.
It makes sense. Like, having grown up in such a tiny, small southern town.
But he ain't in the tiny town.
About as close to Two Rivers as you could probably get in South Carolina. Like my graduating class was like 72 people. Like, it was small. Yeah. So, like, that kind of mentality of, like, this is what sex is. This is how it has to be. Like, the mere fact that Rand was like, okay, well, now we got to get married, right? And she's like, what are you talking about?
That's true.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just know the first church camp trip I went on, Well, I'm not going to finish that.
Well, there's a difference.
I remember church camps.
Yeah,
I remember church camps.
I went in the next day asking the pastor if I needed to confess, and he's like, "Well, we're not Catholic. We don't."
Yeah, he goes like, "We're not Catholic, boy," and you're like, "Oh,
okay. Well, I feel like I need it. Could you just bless me or something?"
I just heard I was supposed to confess to a father, and I figured you were probably the best father to confess to.
Do you have kids? I got to tell somebody.
I got to tell somebody. Excuse me, sir. Do you have kids? I must confess.
Yeah, it's not a. I'm not trying to absolve myself. I just want to brag. Okay, so check it out.
All right. I'm sorry. I can't help but think that even after I transition us into this, I'm keeping us moving on, so we can move. Sorry.
Okay. So yeah. So the Rand handles the spear, the short spear over, kind of almost like a scepter. And Asmodean's out there waiting for him. And Rand immediately throws a shield on Asmodean. You know, they had this quick interchange that's really uncomfortable. He asked Avienda to leave so we could talk to, him alone.
Jason. Asmodean. Jason. Asmodean. Good old Jason. Yeah.
Jason.
Jason with the weird spelling.
J-Dog.
J-Dog.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we have this interaction between Jason.
I love it because, you know, Rand had just been being called out for being soft to his enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, he makes a redirect and he decides, okay, well then, with Jason, I'm going to make sure I'm hard on him so he understands what he did, though it may have helped me, was not acceptable.
Makes you think that Asmodean was maybe having some flashbacks to the old Luz Theron.
Exactly. I mean,
literally took the
short spear. You had Asmodean on his knees kind of begging forgiveness for helping him out, which, you know, all right, well. And then he puts the spear to his neck and he's like, don't let it happen again. Don't let me question you, because if not, you'll pay for it. Mm. So, I mean, I got to give it to Rand. He kind of balls up a little bit. And hopefully he holds this mentality because it's going to be necessary where he's headed next.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been getting vibes with the Rand Asmodean interactions over the last many chapters. As much as Asmodean has not really been into this, like, I'm forced to do it, da-da-da-da-da. I think I get the feeling that Rand is just showing more of his abilities bit by bit. Like, I'm going to semi-predict, like, Asmodean eventually being like, hold on, wait a minute, maybe this Rand guy, the new Luz Theron, is actually way different from every other version before. Maybe he actually is as powerful, like he's doing shit that he shouldn't be able to do, sort of thing. And he might actually become a really good source for Rand, a good ally. Like, he, you know, Asmodean might just, you know, hop on his coattails and be like, all right, well, nobody else is gonna save me, I got a chance with you. So maybe we actually start to see good things out of Asmodean.
Yeah.
I'm hoping so for his sake.
Yeah. And Rand wants to know, like, why or how he did what he did. And Asmodean's like, well, I did this. And he's like, Rand's like, why didn't you ever teach that? Well, you never asked. He goes, all right, new rule. All right. For every time I ask for something, you tell me two things that I didn't ask about.
Yeah. And new things. So and new give things. Me some originals.
Yeah. Give me some originals.
Right? None of this Milli Vanilli shit.
Yeah.
Daisies are beautiful. Also roses and blueberries. They taste sweet.
So yeah, Campbell's commercial.
I mean, hey, we're there though, and I think, you know, at the end of the day, Asmodean and Rand have a clearer understanding, and Rand definitely realizes he can't be such a pansy, and now that he has thrust this sphere into two people,
giggity,
he now knows that he is the man.
And did you guys believe Asmodean when he gave him his excuse?
I am your man.
At this point, you kind of got to roll with it. I mean, he did. Asmodean went out of his way.
I was going to say, there's a difference. I'm not asking whether or not you think he's totally Rand's man. I'm asking, do you think he was telling the truth with the veil on the gate?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, that's what I was asking.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, that did not allow Rand any help
in
that situation.
But Asmodean knows better than Rand's capabilities at this point, because he just knows what Saiyadin can do. So exactly. He knows, like, Rand will recognize this is Saiyadin. There's only one person here who could be used. So, like, I get, I just remember when I was 12, I didn't believe the shit out of him at all. I was like, he's a snake in the grass. And now when I read him, regardless of intentions, I'm just like, this is a suave motherfucker.
Yeah.
He was just the Beethoven
it's
of his
plausible.
Era. He wanted to make music forever, so he gave his soul to the Dark One. I'm like, yeah, okay.
pretty much. So this chapter ends. Yeah, this chapter ends with Rand asking about slicing through women's weaves because Lanfear did to him once, and he's like, "There has to be a way for a male to do it to a woman's weaves." And and Asmodean's like, "I guess I can teach you how to do that," and that's how we end this chapter.
Well, he admitted to a weakness too. He's like, "You know, I know we've tried, and I have not been able to do it, but I need you to try harder."
Yeah.
So.
And
you know, they're gonna make it work. This
sounds like Chris's bosses. I need you to try.
Try there is not.
We I won't go there again. Just look at listen to previous episodes where I discussed the schools that I grew up in, and I've watched many fights with weave flying everywhere.
That was that's not where I thought it was.
It's chaotic. It's very chaotic. Just refer to the previous episodes.
I won't. I won't retell the story.
I've seen
lots of fights.
You generally don't want to be involved, but sometimes you realize, oh wait, it's happening all around me. Now I'm in the middle of it. What do I do? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like rugby style. You tuck and cover your ears so they don't get ripped off. And
yeah, tuck and roll, tuck and roll.
Go with the flow.
Yep.
That's why I keep your backpack on while you're sitting at the cafeteria table. I learned that lesson early on with food fights. You keep the backpack on, and it protects your back and your shirt.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyways, so you guys ready to the next one or anything we missed?
All right, quick question. This is kind of like an aside from the content, but more toward his character thing. Remember, Asmodean mentioned that since Rand cut him off from the Dark One, he is going to go insane. Yes. I wonder if you guys are paying, like I'm not saying like paying attention, like, ooh, it's going to happen. This is something I always pay attention to once I've learned about it, even from back, like, you know, when I reread Wheel of Time and I'm watching Eye of the World, I'm watching Rand in the Great Hunt, I'm watching him in, you know, the Dragon Reborn, where he's just clearly in his own mental insanity playing the flute and killing people around a fire.
Yeah.
Like, I like to watch the mental deterioration of human beings. That's terrible, but
I just saw the look on your face. You like it, but carry on.
Yeah. But the point is, like, do you think he might be going insane yet? I'm not asking because of any material or behavior you've seen. No. I'm just asking because remember he said it will happen. And based on what, like, we've heard from Aes Sedai, like, it happens at various rates for various men.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, I'll answer. I've had that question in my mind. There's been that little flag to pay attention to ever since he's been cut off. And I've seen no evidence of it. Even with all of this, I've seen no evidence of it. And in fact, might see evidence of the contrary, even with Rand. As you were going through your rant, you were doing the Pied Piper thing. Rand has had some very effed up crazy moments, but then somehow he's had moments after that are very coherent, very lucid. Not crazy, very lucid, like really good train of thought, great strategy, great, like, so I'm a little confused. Maybe it's not just a progression, like a straight line. Like once it starts happening, you go down. Maybe it's touch and go. You have some bad moments come back until the bitch gets worse.
That's actually how mental illness tends to work, though. I mean, like you have your good days and you have your bad days. Like,
sure.
I mean, like, you know, like not to get too much into it, but I mean, like I used to date a girl who was a paranoid schizophrenic, and that ended up being a big also. Was diagnosed with bipolar disorder like at the same time. So it's one of those things where it's like, I've seen how that can happen. And I've seen that there are days, everything's great. There's like no
amazing
problem.
Great.
In fact, you are working at almost like 120% mental capacity. Cause that's like what a manic depressive does, you know? So it's like, I don't know, because I always like to think that not like to think like I want to inflict pain on Jordan, but I mean, like I do think that he definitely had to see between PTSD and other things. I mean, as a helicopter gunner in Vietnam, he had to have seen some trauma and known people who went through that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So he had to see mental deterioration of one form or another, even if he didn't have a family member with like an actual mental disorder.
And the ups and downs of it. So Rand, exactly. I'll say we've definitely seen evidence of the deterioration, but we've seen big upswings that are pretty promising. With Asmodean, I've yet to see anything yet where I'm like, he's slipping. So, but we also haven't had a Asmodean perspective. So maybe he's keeping shit on the down low that we don't know. And that'd be cool if this is a segue to like 3 chapters from now, we get an Asmodean perspective and he's totally losing his shit, but playing it off to everybody that he's keeping his cool. That'd be awesome.
Well, the next chapter's not it because we're not even with Rand anymore.
Yeah. Moving right along.
Hard left.
To chapter 33, Question of Crimson. And our symbol's an elephant. I guess it's a boar horse.
The citrus fruit animal is what yes. I, you know.
Yeah. So yeah.
Oliphants. There we go.
We'll yeah. So we're back with Tom, Nynaeve, and Elaine and company.
Good old Julin. Yeah.
Julin. Yeah.
Good old Julin. What a name. Not Julian. Julin. Yeah. Like, could you not have picked like a more awkwardly spelled name? Like as a kid, I always read it as Julian. As a kid, like it took me until like my sixth read to realize like, oh, it's Julin, not a real name. Interesting. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Well, it's not Julian.
Apparently not. Okay, go ahead and try to tell 12-year-old David that.
Bro, I'm rolling with Julian. All right, let me say this.
I also called him Thom. I thought it was Thom Merlin. Exactly. So, I was 12.
And it's cool.
My dad's name is Thomas with an H. It's cool. And I still didn't get it.
And Will Wheaton. If there's an H, you pronounce it.
Wheaton.
Hey, do you pronounce the H?
You're being weird.
Whip.
The cool whip.
Cool whip.
Come on, Brian. You're being weird. Oh, come on. That one didn't even have an H in it.
All right. So Chris is getting water. Well, he's getting water. I'm going to give a shout out to all of the Moulin Rouge fans out there. And maybe I'm
the Napoleonic Wars fans in general. Let's not discriminate.
Just go to town. It could be because I'm a huge Moulin Rouge fan. We're talking about the Menagerie, and I know it's circus and not quite the same as Moulin Rouge. But for whatever reason, when I read the chapters about the girls and Tom and Julian, whatever his name is, in with the Menagerie, the mental images I have and the way the story unfolds is very chaotic, kind of like how that movie is. Like, it's just moving fast. It's in your face. It's actually... And that's just the vibe I get when I read these chapters. And to me, it's very exciting. I don't know.
Yeah. Ian sees the circus, goes, spectacular, spectacular.
Yes.
The words are in the vernacular.
Exactly. Thank you for curing me of my silly obsession with love. Throws the cash on the ground. What chapter is
the
this?
The knife right. brushed Nani's hair as a thunk into the board she was leaning against, and she flinched behind her blindfold. She wished she had a decent braid instead of locks hanging loose around her shoulders. When I first read this, I was like, what in the world? Because it's been so long since I paid attention to a Nynaeve chapter. I was like, what have they gotten themselves into? Where are we? Like, I had a panic moment when I was sitting there reading. I was like,
what is this?
Exactly. I couldn't. And then I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. They're traveling with the circus. That's right. But didn't she say she wasn't getting involved? Like, all these thoughts just started running through my mind. And one time I'm like, we have definitely moved along without actually seeing this happen. So what's going on here?
I just love that she's rocking dreadlocks. Like, she's becoming hotter and hotter in my mind's eye. But yeah. I mean, at least a once a week shower is beneficial, but still, you know.
Hot water, though.
Yeah. Living off the land. There's something very appealing about that to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're practicing performances, as it says. And and Luca shows up. Good old Val.
Oh, what do you guys think of Val and Luca? I need to know, Ian.
Mr. Dreamy gag.
It reminds me, like, he's just so smooth.
We all knew a guy like this, right? We all knew a guy like this.
And we've also been frustrated about the girl that fell for his charms. And you're like, why can't you not see it? It's like so fake and over the top. What are you doing? Which is a conversation that Elaine later has with Nynaeve, but like, we have to bring it up now. Like, as the interaction happens and you see Nynaeve's response, it's so weird. Everything we know about Nynaeve, we also know about her little love affair with Lan, which we all are hopeful for. And then this guy steps in and he is not Lan. Like, I don't even have to list the ways he's not Lan. If you've been reading this book and listening to this podcast, he is not Lan, right? But somehow Nynaeve is just giving him the time of day at all. So if I showered afterwards, it felt dirty and they didn't even do anything. weird.
But those Cavs.
Just
though,
remember, Harriet them Cavs, was though.
The most interesting man in the world. That's who it is.
Yeah.
I always have to remind myself when I read a chapter like this that I'm like, okay, not only did Harriet approve this, but she was just like, oh, fuck yeah, no changes.
Yeah, no changes. Yeah, full set.
I mean, I don't know, Dick. Don't. This is not the official view of the Wheel Reads podcast. This is the only view of an asshole named David Russell.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. But it might be right.
Yeah. Oh, Ian. Oh, no. Oh, Ian, cut that.
But them Cavs, though. But them Cavs. I mean,
maybe that's what it is.
It's the Cavs. She's got a weakness for Cavs. Yeah. Did she ever talk about Land's Cavs? I can't remember, Alan.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, well, damn. Oh, no. Land, my boy.
He got them chicken legs.
He's skipping leg day. No.
Yeah.
Yep.
Land Land has that jail bod. You know, all upper body, no leg days at all.
Chris, he's one of your friends who's used to being the tallest man in the room because he's 6'3" until he encounters. No, actually, I'm sorry. Is Land the same height as Rant? I can't ever.
I mean, we, Chris, you know that. You know, a guy gets hemmed up for a while, is in the clink, and then, you know, gets out. He's all upper body, no legs at all.
Uh-huh. I think it's an eye of the world where Rand is like, holy shit, this dude's as tall as I am.
It's hard to do leg day on the inside.
It is hard to like the hand inside.
Yeah. Call body squats.
Yeah.
Body squats by Chris. Hashtag.
There you go.
All right. So where are we? What's going on?
So she manages to get rid of him after he does like sweet poetry or something to his ear.
Something lame.
We're gonna get into this thing. Oh, it's so easy to derail.
Yeah. And then Julian comes in and is like, Galad's over on the other side of the river. So just thought I'd drop that. There, that
Glad, what a stupid paladin boy. Yeah. Lawful there's stupid.
There's another one. Just look at him.
Yeah, that's good lad.
See, yeah. And I think you and I all fell in like the same thing in high school. Where it's like, all right, look, we're kind of good looking. We're not like stupid good looking, and so it makes you just go like, look, I'm not ugly, and I'm not vapid. Like, come on.
I should be able to land an 8 all day long.
And this probably is just the same way it is across all genders and sexualities. Yes, exactly. Yeah. When you're a hard 7, baby, like, you know what I mean? Seriously. Just look at the 10s, you're like, I hate you.
Yep. That's a wrap. So it's funny, you're joking about that, but maybe my like discontent, maybe my like towards the Galads and towards this other douche that's coming in talking to Naive. Might have something to do with that. Like, why would you give that, like, just morally and ethically and character wise those
understand
like,
from a dude perspective the alternative.
I give them the time
though.
Of day.
Well, let's take a pause for a minute. Luke is very smooth. He's debonair.
He's a like, good wordsmith. Yes,
he's that guy that's coming in. He's throwing compliments left and right. He slipped up. Had he not slipped up with the dress, Nynaeve would have given him even more play.
Mm-hmm.
You but can't so? You recognize even it even as win? As a game? Can't like why can't you recognize it as acting and not I mean, genuine?
When did Nynaeve ever get to flirt? But never in her life has she ever gotten to flirt.
Well, the
she
one
went from
time,
being the daughter of the wise woman to the wise woman.
That's like, true.
Mm-hmm. Or the you know at least yeah, mm-hmm. the mentor of the wise woman to the wise woman. Like that's a problem. Like
she attempted flirting with Lan, and it was like, I love you forever. And he's like, I can't. And she's like, well, I will love to hate to love to hate you. Love
and
you.
He goes, here's my love ring that weighs 9 pounds. You can't wear can it on your hand together. Physically.
Yeah, right. That's true. Yeah. They both kind of messed up that. So maybe she's learning. Good point.
Yeah.
She's never flirted before. I mean, good for you, girl.
Yeah.
When you look at somebody like that and you're really paying attention to her character, she's kind of torn because she's never been the topic of a sexual encounter. Like she's always been the wise one.
But doesn't she own a mirror? Do they not have mirrors in the Two Rivers?
But
look, back to David's point.
And I'm over you.
I'm mad you called me out for this, David, but I did not have the women fawning over me in high school. But whenever I finally got a compliment from a woman, when she was like, you're kind of cute, I was like, I know. And when she was, you know, when a girl was finally like, you have very beautiful blue eyes, I'm like, yeah, I know. Because I own a mirror. Like
I don't even have that. So.
Right. But
self-confidence is a thing.
No, I know, of course. Yeah, yeah, no. And they're like, David, you're so smart and funny. I'm like, I know, but I mean, like, tell me I'm pretty. Like, come on.
I've been acing tests and making myself laugh all by myself for many years. Tell me something I don't know.
Yeah, I tell a joke because I've already laughed at it in my head, and I'm just gracing you with the opportunity to laugh yourself.
So. Yeah. Well, I guess Nynaeve didn't have a mirror, and this is all new to her, so.
She just harmless flirting. And you know okay. what? I don't feel bad. I literally feel like, good for you, girl. That's like all I felt this whole time reading it this past time.
That's fair. But, that's fair.
Yeah. And, you know, for her, it was really awkward and put her in a situation where she was frustrated kind of for the rest of the day. And then when you had our boy come and tell her, like, still Goliath's okay. right around the corner. So when Julian hops in, he's like, you know, there's a situation here where I need your attention. Like, she bites his head off. Like, it really sucks for him in that moment. So I was that guy. So I'll put myself in that category.
Same.
Hey, let me go ahead and let you know it's important. Let me tell you what's going on. And then, you know, the pretty girl bites your head off because she doesn't want to hear it. But at the same time, she realizes that they're caught between a rock and a hard place. They don't know where to go. She can't remember. I mean, she leaves that interaction with Tom a little nicked, upset about the idea of wearing a dress that was over-sexualizing her body. She was frustrated with the fact that she can't remember where she needs to go. She's like literally snapping twigs and plants and stuff as she walks by. And then she gets even worse news. Like, you can't go that direction without the potential of being caught by Galad. Mm-hmm. And so she's frustrated. She's kind of over it. And then she walks in and you got Elaine, who just kind of wants to lecture a little bit, because not only with all that going on, she also has a black eye.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually where a lot of my questions that I wrote for this podcast stemmed from.
It's like, so why, you know, Elaine right away, like, what happened? Like, I know Tom didn't do that. Like, he's, which,
yeah, no.
Elaine and Tom's conversations are kind of now shifted now. Yeah, Elaine no longer has that interest anymore. So,
yeah, it does mention that as well. So, I mean, what do you think the black eye came from?
Oh, well, we know she got her ass handed.
I was gonna say, doesn't say it like, love of God, Alan, don't look, as the guest, I am already like, okay, so I reread these chapters, like I listened to the audiobook and I tried to watch look at the wiki so I knew which chapter you're talking about. But like, whenever you're doing something like, oh well, what do you know, but it was in there, I'm like, oh shit, I'm not gonna spoil anything.
Yeah,
sorry.
So she was tossing around with some other female from the menagerie that is mm-hmm. like a kung fu fighter.
She fought with someone who knew how to grapple. Ashanshan. Is literally what happened.
Ashanshan.
Yeah,
I mean,
all right.
Everyone was kung fu.
So basically, Ian, like maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong. So basically, according to the Universal Fight Plan, Nynaeve gave her an overhand right, and this
left
chick
herself
just
exposed.
Literally took advantage of that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
Universal Fight Plan, for everybody who doesn't know, is that 90% of people are right-handed, and 90% of those right-handed people will lead with an overhand right. And yeah, so everything predictable just bases on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So when you're in high school and all you have is one pair of boxing gloves, but you decide to box your friends and you're both right-handed, not speaking from experience. So you take turns in between rounds and who gets the right all hand, right, left hand. And pretty much the right hander knocks out the left hander every single round. Like, so every other round you're getting knocked out. Yeah.
So I'll say this little bit. It requires jumping forward to the explanation of where the black
Please,
guy came
for
from.
Please, for love of Christ, let's jump forward as much as possible. Yeah.
And Nynaeve tossing with this lady who clearly like knows how
to fuck
fight.
She's doing, yeah.
She's got skills. And so my mind runs to like the little bit of knowledge I have of like your Eastern fighting, your specifically, anyways, really any of them, and the philosophies behind them and everything. And it's less a physical thing, more of a mental thing. And
because
then I'm
it's
like,
about your opponent has a weapon and you don't. Is that sure why that's so different? Yes.
But in order to master that, you have to master your own mind mm-hmm. and body and understanding mm-hmm. all of that together. So I'm thinking,
right,
Nynaeve has this mental block with her channeling, and we really don't know for certain like what's preventing her from moving on. We haven't seen a recovery plan of how the Aes Sedai are supposed to help her achieve getting past that. But if she actually goes into training with somebody like this that maybe Nynaeve is first interested in learning how to best somebody physically,
right?
But that learns the mental and emotional component to it. Maybe it helps her unlock some of her blockage, sort of.
So you think she's gonna learn under Serenity,
like a meditation kind of like leap?
I don't see that ever happening.
I guess it's hopeful, but
maybe she hooks up with another Aes Sedai at some point. I mean, we know she has. I mean, Shanshan, because we know she has a friend that is Shanshan. But you know, her and Sarandrin, she's trying to use her essentially to gain knowledge before she splits. She doesn't but trust if, her. She thinks
what if she
something.
Accidentally stumbles into learning from her things she didn't know she could learn from her, and then this relationship builds?
I know, Kuntu.
Yeah. I don't know. Again, this is a lot of hopeful because I'm desperate.
Really like Sean Chan Judo versus like Aiel, you know, Muay Thai is clearly what I'm getting from all of this.
Yeah. I guess as a reader, I'm desperate to like find a solution for the Nynaeve problem, which is her being
but
this
we also have to
amazing,
remember
amazingly powerful
and
channeler.
And well,
yeah. Five and a half.
One of the questions I actually wrote down was, when was the last time you think that anyone physically disciplined Nynaeve? Even as a child? Like, has it been
Egwene?
Since her mother?
Egwene.
Egwene, you're right. That did happen. Right. I totally forgot about that. That didn't go well, though. And I'm talking about how, like, she took a punch to the eye and she's just like, yeah, well, you know, and that tells me like she got her ass beat. Like it wasn't just like she was defeated. It was she kept trying. She kept popping up like a fucking Weeble doll. Like Weebles will wobble, they won't fall down. It just kept knocking her down. Had to knock down that reserve.
But also kept her anger in check. And I mean, she had enough anger where she could channel. And she even mentioned, she's like, I could have ended it with channeling like that. But
that's no good.
So there's
no victory in that. It's all pride.
No, there was fear that she'd be discovered.
Yeah, but even then,
it still takes
self control.
Isn't hot headed enough to do that in the moment? That's all I meant.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of wishful thinking on my part. But.
I love that. And that's actually the reason I wrote that down. I literally wrote down, do you think anyone has ever physically disciplined Nynaeve before the start of the series?
I think off camera Lan might have. It could have been.
Oh, well, that's a little bit. That's capital D discipline. That's a whole different.
Going right into it, speaking about the fight itself, I really thoroughly enjoyed the actual conversation about how Nynaeve was just like, so yeah, this happened, and then this happened, and then that happened, and the other thing happened, and I don't know why I'm like I have to blubber to you and tell you everything, but the role that Nynaeve is now playing is super hilarious because she went from being like the badass wisdom to the child in the bunch.
Yeah, so different. I won't say it's refreshing. It's very different. Like I'm reading it, but I'm like caught off guard a little bit. Like, what is going on here? Yeah. But you're right. Total role reversal.
And then she like gets told off. She's like, you've really gone too far here. And Elaine was like getting on her. And she's like, well, she somehow threw me over her shoulder. And I got up and I smacked her. Then she knocked me down with her fist. And then I got this eye. And then it's like, you got your ass handed to you, absolutely. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're realizing that you're, I hate to say it, a less than person in this particular situation. And, you know, Nynaeve did choose not to use the power, but I got disconnected again. Darn, hold on. Either way, like her not using the power essentially set her up for failure in that sense, but then also it kind of shows that she's got a lot of learning to do if she's going to really be a force in this book. So I'm actually more or less concerned about the role she's really going to play.
Yeah, it's crazy. Early on, she's like, I won't say a front runner, but she's a very strong character right off the bat. And then the more we get into it, the more books we get into it, the more like we realize how emotionally stunted she is or was, and like she has a lot of growth she has to work through. So like it's almost like she's moved back in terms of regression and being able to catch up to the events that are happening. So I totally recognize that. It's just weird. It's uncomfortable, really. It's almost like we're watching, listening to, reading about a whole new character. This is not the 90s you started with at all.
But then you get the flip side. You have Elaine who's like, hey, because Nynaeve walks in and Elaine's looking at something. She hides it real quick. It's like, what are you looking at? What are you doing? Nynaeve wants to take the story off of herself. And then she pulls out the idom. And then Elaine's like, I think I can make one. It's like, wait, what? Why would
Nynaeve's like, why would you want to make another collar? And Elaine's like, no.
So let me tell you where my mind went first. My mind went first that maybe this doesn't work on men, M-E-N, but maybe this is the way they get away to help control Rand. Like, that's where my mind went first.
Oh, first. Okay.
And then the conversation began to evolve in the sense of, like, you don't get it. Like, I'm figuring out how to make Angreal and Sangreal and Tangreal. Like, this hasn't happened in ages.
A thousand years.
Explosion.
And I can see the intricacy. I can see the pattern. So here's her specialty.
How huge is this? And we talked in the last couple of episodes about how some things Jordan just explains in such great detail. And you're like, holy cow. Like, there's nothing left to the imagination. We're all picturing the same room he just described. And then sometimes he'll just slap you with something. And this is not a small event. Elaine recognizing that she can create these things. Nynaeve, not just the necklace. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I mean, like, in general, it's the Tarangreal.
Yeah, and the Sangreal.
Right.
She's saying,
I can make, that's not small.
No.
Huge.
She's like, I can even think I can figure out how they made Whitebridge.
Yeah, let me drop the H. It's not even huge. It's huge. Huge. And he just sprinkles it in there and then we move on, like, with the reading. And I'm like, no. If this is true, if she's able to do this, to say game changer, that's an understatement. I mean, she
could create new seals.
I didn't even think of that. New seals. She can create new swords.
New little Buddha figures.
The Haramic swords, like little put in your pocket, right. Like, you know, plus 10 dexterity pieces. Like,
exactly.
She could just turn the world upside down here. And how many thousands of years has it been since somebody's been able to do this?
A thousand.
And she just stumbled upon it by looking at it going, yeah, I could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that goes back to your theory of women to Viren. Like, I know it's not really big in the book.
I'm glad the show's going that direction though. It should have been in the book.
I agree. Mm-hmm. And here we have it.
Yeah. Alan and I, whenever Alan and I get together, we can't not talk Wheel of Time. And I'll bring up statements. I'll tell him, I'm like, I'm going to bring this up in the episode. And then sometimes I forget. But this conversation we had, shit, damn the wine. What was I about to say?
No idea. We were driving on the way to this topic. I said, have you read the chapters yet?
Something about.
I said, hey, check out the Boys 3 trailer.
Hey, wait, Chris, what were you saying? Because you hit it and you reminded me.
I mean, the creation of the recreation of the seals is kind of the point that I was making. And
oh, no, the Tavirin shit.
Tavirin, yes.
Oh, I reemphasize like how disappointing it would be if all of these other phenomenal characters, and they're turning out a lot of them to be female, if they're just phenomenal just because the Tavirin men near them make them amazing. And I don't know if it ever gets, I don't know if it's ever told to us that Avienda is fucking fantastic because she was near Tavirin, or if Elaine and Nynaeve and Egwene could do what they do because Rand just needed it. If that's the end of the story, reading it now in 2022, that's disappointing.
Well, we know that can't be the case because we know he was a feminist, or his wife was a 90s feminist. Like,
I'm hoping he at least left it open-ended. Yeah. So that at the end we're left to believe, okay, there's the possibility that they were, but at that time, for whatever reason, people couldn't recognize it.
So David, which one did you say became Amelin's seat?
You're fishing for answers?
You'll never trick me like that, Chris.
Yeah.
I've got to try every once in a while. I got to sneak one in there.
I mean, do you want me to say Raffo or do you want me to just say, like, not today, Zerg? Which one will it be?
Look,
I prefer Chris, not today because that implies that it could be tomorrow.
Alan, right. Try me again tomorrow. Ply me with a different drug. We'll see.
Alan, on the other hand, like, sure.
Sure.
And then 4 books later, we're like, wait a second. Didn't we bring that up before? And Alan's like, hit elephants circus.
Yeah. I just want to point out, I'll say it now. Now's the perfect timing. So I'm looking at his eyes. When David held up the bottle of port, I thought about Chris.
Oh no, look at all that's left.
Chris when he was like, my gosh, these dark and stormies are delicious, and we're mixing them with 151. If y'all don't know about port wine.
It's candy wine.
Yeah, but not everybody can drink it, and the percentage is well above your average wine. It's up there.
Yeah. This particular one is 21%.
Yeah, it was George Washington made his own port. That's why I said you're drinking a very colonial drink.
Yeah, his is actually still the highest liter sold port in America.
Yeah,
the company that was his. Yes.
Yeah.
So Nynaeve changes the subject after all this. Galad again. and they realize they're kind of stuck between White Cloaks and the mobs from the Prophet. And the Forsaken are hunting them, and they need to get to where this Rebel Aes Sedai camp is. And they can't remember the name of it. And they just kind of, she thinks they need to leave the Menagerie, but that's kind of where we end this chapter.
Well, so I think this is very interesting. And I find it hilarious sometimes because I know people that are like this. Elaine's like, we don't have to worry about Galad right now. And Anya's like, what do you mean? She's like, he won't come anywhere near the Menagerie. And it's like, why not? Because he can't stand to see animals caged. He can hunt.
Yeah.
He can train them, but he'll never put them in a cage.
Mm-hmm.
That's strange, right?
Can I ask a question of Alan and David? And I know it's probably going to be a read and find out, but maybe there's a
way. I promise to give the most cryptic answer I can. Yeah. So there you go.
But you might be able to answer this without answering it. But there's hints of like possibly being able to maybe not like Galad, but like understand and appreciate him, like look at him and not in a negative light. Is that true? Is that possible? Is that going to happen?
If you recall even Elaine's first like description of him, he always does what's right. So there will be times what that encompasses is he will be the shining knight in armor. He doesn't give a shit what it takes to be right.
Yeah, he sticks to that.
Exactly. No matter whom it hurts. So
and you're going to love him and hate 10, him for
if it helps, and then 1 out of 10 it hurts, he doesn't care.
Man, that, yeah. I guess that kind of confirms some already feeling.
I love the smirk that Alan's giving. You have to watch Alan's smirk.
All right. Yeah.
So that's how we end this chapter. So
I love hate.
Yeah. Any final thoughts about this
chapter? We really need to get that last one. It's the most important one. So let's do this.
Yep.
All right. Chapter 34, A Silver Arrow. And we have the dream ring as the symbol. So, yeah. And yeah, we start out with it's Elaine's turn to cook. And not even thinking about her cooking. Mm. It's just like, yeah, everyone always just doesn't eat, you know, when I cook. I don't understand why.
She's like, I think I'm a pretty good cook. Like, I know. Oh, she's like, I know for a fact I don't sew well. Like, sewing's not my thing. I've never promised to be somebody that's going to stitch your clothes up. And, you know, there are other things that I don't do well. Like, cleaning's not really my thing. But cooking, I can do. But for whatever reason, the men just always seem to find an excuse to go elsewhere when I'm cooking.
No art, no audio for you, Chris.
I just cut it back on.
All right, cool.
I'm watching.
I just got it from Amis.
Got reconfigured.
Yep, I've been doing it every 5 minutes.
I try to be as honest as I can with our audience when we get there. This was not a dull chapter for me, but no. all of the lead up.
It seems like it should have been, right?
I have no comments until we get to where I'll let y'all get there eventually. But there's a part that was emotionally draining for me, actually. Like this is the closest I came to like legit tears. Like it wasn't just allergies. There's some intense moments towards the end, but the buildup in this chapter, I was just like, okay, come on.
Right. Actually, revel in my manly tears, I mean, sir. It, so there you go.
To be real with you, I mean, you're right, but there are some important moments here that we need to really pay attention to because it speaks to the character and it speaks to their potential ability.
Absolutely. So I'm admitting how shallow I am. I didn't recognize Gawain, that.
Right? Excuse me, Elaine. And I like to cook. I try my hardest. I'm not the best cook, but I enjoy doing it. I do it because I like to see other people eat and enjoy.
Yeah.
Elaine likes the process towards perfection. And what did she just figure out that she can do? She just figured out that she can differentiate the different pieces of an Angrel and Tangrel and Sangrel, and she can break down the mechanics of creating it. She's very meticulous.
Yeah, and if she could do that, she better be able to make a bomb-ass key lime pie.
Exactly, but to the other way around, if she can make bomb-ass food, then she must be able to quickly figure out the ingredients or pieces to the puzzle.
I love that connect. Are you kidding me?
So that's where I love that. This. I'm like, you know, the food is a metaphorical sense for what we're looking at when it comes to what she's going to do in two or three books when she's creating tools for the group to use.
And
it's going to be a continuous repetition of, I didn't get this right because I didn't do this. I didn't get this right because I didn't do that. And it's going to get to the point where she gets so good at it that she's churning out tools that they can use with relative ease. And it doesn't put a lot of drain on them.
It's going to get
near perfection.
It's going to get to the point where she takes one sip and then takes like the tiniest little pinch of garlic salt and goes, pop.
And it's amazing.
It just like clicks.
Yeah. So Nynaeve, on the one hand, Nynaeve can slam you with intensity behind one or two things, just pure intensity. But Elaine is learning to hit you with complexity.
Exactly.
Oh, Chris. Hey, floaties. David, put them on. Because you're drunk.
I got the shirt, man. And I got my coat on.
That raw intensity.
You saw my co-pilot Charlie. We got
Chris
this.
Is taking us there.
I mean, I'm saying the raw intensity that Nynaeve takes you there with. I mean, she feels like she can cook well. She feels like she does things very well.
She's but when she puts salt, confidence. She puts salt.
Yes, salt. She's got all the confidence, but it's not really there. And so
Alan's doing the little sprinkle thing,
and then you copy like they could see you any better.
But Elaine, to your point, Elaine's like, well, with what I have going on, I need 6.5 little like chunks of salt. It's precision, and she can work it all together. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
What Chris. We're seeing is we're not seeing a breakdown in Nynaeve's character at all. We're seeing the other two flourish.
Hmm.
And what we're really seeing is the fact that Nynaeve has a lot of faults that had she never left the Two Rivers would never have come to light because she was perfect for what they needed her for. What she talks about, I'm good at healing, natural healing. Like this is what I do. I've learned this skill. That's all I ever needed to do until my world was taken outside of where we are now.
And we're not in a place to knock anybody's potential because after saying all this, if there's Nynaeve lovers out there, I'm not knocking Nynaeve.
No.
Her potential is still phenomenal.
When
right?
she opens but up the, to her potential.
Right. Her path now to get there, to really achieve it, is longer than maybe we thought at the beginning.
Yeah.
But she'll get there. But right now, my mind's still kind of blown in how, like, you just say a few words sometimes, Chris, and it just reshapes my perspective just a little bit on things, and I love it. You nailed it.
And then we have them enter Tala Anrian, or we have
Nynaeve insist on going,
and Nynaeve insisted because she is still trying to avoid Egwene. Mm-hmm. We have to put that out there because their last interaction really was
a little touchy,
very touchy. I think their last interaction was very touchy. And again, we're seeing these inadequacies continuously coming out. And we also see that Nynaeve's trying to find some level of importance. She's grasping at straws. She wants to be on top of something again. So like now she's like, I gotta figure out where it is we need to go, so at least I can get that little bit of control back. Mm-hmm. And right. She's getting there. Like she's like Dar Lard something
something yeah something.
Sala Jalapeno. Something like that.
Something, something. Yeah.
You find yourself as the reader, you're trying to scream it at her. You're like, ah!
Yeah.
I've done that.
Yeah. So, so Elaine finally concedes to letting Nynaeve go to tell her on Riad. And Nynaeve goes in and finds Brigitte there in the world of dreams.
Captain Hindsight, big mistake.
Or as Zul and I like to insist, Brigitte.
Brigadidi.
Let's just say this, by the way. What does she show up in? That sexy ass red dress. Mm-hmm. Who's she really thinking about, guys?
Them bell.
Let's
bottoms.
Talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about me and I. Me. Let's talk about
shit. That's the remix.
Let's talk about sex.
So he needs to write it. We need Chris to just bass. And then Alan, Ian, and I will give the higher harmonies.
Is this where we have that moment where we see a little bit of gender differentiating in the book? I mean,
I just want to point out, Alan. Oh, sorry, Chris, my bad.
No, you're good.
No, what did you say? I missed you entirely.
I was saying that is this where we're seeing a little bit of gender differentiation? Because Brigitte's looking awfully hard.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I was going to say, like, between the fact that, like, you know, Brigitte's so popular, it was just one of those things where it's like, I mean, are we just going to just accept that this is just, you know, end all be all ultimate woman? And the answer is yes. So,
well, you got to remember.
Ultimate woman of Wheel of Time is Brigitte. And I challenge any Wheel of Time fan to tell me otherwise.
Just from where we're at right now in the books, Brigitte has been in the fight.
It has literally nothing to do with anything except the fact that she's just literally Pat Benatar and
Stevie Nicks.
Stevie Nicks and I'm forgetting one other person. She's just three rockers together. She's just Janis the Joplin. Coolest, basically the Pat Benatar. That's what I'm missing. The coolest chick you've ever met basically is what Brigitte is. And everything from personality to strength to just badassery.
Yeah. Let's take away the coolest chick part, take away the chick part. So
my bad, please.
What I was about to say was she's been in this fight for so long, but like
how long has she been spun out? You're right.
She also still, I mean, she's still a woman and she still has her love life with somebody she's loved over and over again for many reincarnations, whatever you want to call it, but she's also still been fighting the fight. And there was a little nuanced part where even Nynaeve recognizes her ability to chat with the ladies and then immediately turn on fight mode. And when it's time to be serious, be serious. And Nynaeve was like, I actually like this version of her more when she's like super serial fighting the fight. And I don't know. So you're right in that she's...
Basically, you explained right exactly now, what I was trying to say in far better terms.
Right now, the coolest... I could say female character, but one of the coolest characters we've run into in her ability to be layered like an ogre, like an onion. They've got layers, you know?
Yeah.
It's the most delicious things on the goddamn planet.
Yeah, no, pretty cool. So anyways, I jumped around a lot there, but
yeah.
Could you do the story?
Yeah, so meets with Nynaeve, and first thing she's does like found her. I found my Gideon.
Yeah.
I know where she is.
Right away I thought that was a setup.
I could take her to her.
First and, I thought
Chris thinks it's a setup. That's worth noting.
I didn't think it was a setup.
No. So I have first so much I thought it was more Gideon. I thought she had tracked down Brigitte.
Oh
taken okay. Brigitte's place and was like, yes, follow me into my web. I was like, no. As a reader, I was like panicked. I was like, don't do it, don't. Because we know the last time that they interacted, Brigitte had already like semi-trapped her or Egwene. And she knew that they were after her and she knew they were watching and she was looking for them. So I was like, damn, she did it. Like she killed Brigitte and she's taking her place. And now she's going to get Nynaeve. And Nynaeve can't channel at will. So, and they're not supposed to be able to channel in the dream
for real anyway. They're supposed to use different tools here. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, here it goes. Mm-hmm. Here we're about to lose our first main character.
About to find out.
Moment of solidarity with other first-time readers out there that are pacing themselves with us. If you feel like it's impossible to trust anyone, you're not wrong. Even this many books in, these guys have the benefit of reading the whole series and they know how things might play out. But
it's true, we do.
Chris, initially when you said that, I was like, there's no way. No, I don't see that. But then your explanation, I'm like,
and then no, you watch pretty much and I at. Just stone face you and you're like, well, damn.
Do you ever see that video of like a dad and his kid like on the ladder for like a slide, and he's like, all right, fall back into my arms, and the kid like falls back and the dad just like walks away and lets the kid fall. He goes, rule number one, trust no one.
Right. How many books are we in and that is still the case? So Chris, you're totally like right in
meanwhile
thinking that initially, like, how do you trust anything what's going on?
How? You're right.
And it would have been the perfect setup. If this was Martin, that would have been the story.
Oh, yeah. Martin would have already had to announce three books at once, or we would have given up on him.
Also, people would have gotten like slaughtered, but you know, we're not there yet.
Yeah, you know, it would have had like, you know, who knows how long Loyal would have lasted. And we all could have lost
Loyal forever. Been, by the way. Loyal's with Perrin. Editing his
with Perrin.
I know.
And like right Perrin? Now he's real life.
Two Rivers. Yeah,
he's documenting the honeymoon. Perrin, he's documenting the honeymoon. You know,
so first of all,
he's like you know fucking file is making him sketch it.
I just want to update you on his actual whereabouts today.
Oh shit. Yeah, you would know.
So came back to Virginia. First thing I did, obviously, was visit Loyal. And like I said, Alan and I talked about this, so I should share it with the group. Yeah, he's doing fantastic. He's doing a few edits to some future books. But because, you know, this is actually this big moment. First time I'm staying with Meredith at her place while her kids are here. Those of you that know, with the whole blended family relationship thing, that's a huge first step. And we invited Loyal, and Meredith has met him, and he's fucking cool with it. But Loyal was like, no, you should establish your relationship and boundaries with the children, and then I'll come meet them. And totally right. So just y'all know.
Yeah, I like that.
Good dude. Yeah, yeah. He's chilling. Alan needs to come visit you in the next couple of days. He said he could walk there, no big deal. So awesome. Alan next episode.
He can run here. Yeah. Oh, faster my car.
Yep.
Anyway, Maniv agrees to go check out the Forsaken, or at least Mogedion, and it ends up being a bunch of Forsaken. It's the five Forsaken again. They're all gathered around.
Now, why is Mogedion watching them from up high?
Mogedion. Yeah. Said it right.
Our four talking in a circle. She's at a level above them watching them.
She's a watcher.
And then
she's the spider.
Yeah, but
someone's got to watch the watchers.
Is she
and that's
really
what
that
we're
afraid
doing.
That they're going to come at her? Or does she not want them to know that she's really paying attention to what's going on? What's the deal? Like, what was your thought?
I've always got the vibe from her and the way she's described that she's a spider. And then the way you see this playing out. That's her power. That's her strength. She knows things that nobody else thinks she should know. She can work her way around this world, this dream world, better than most. But like you said, she wants to watch without them knowing that they're being watched, and that gives her power. That gives her future moves. You know, she's playing chess and they're playing checkers.
That's true. Is she really capable of that, though? Is she really smart enough? I mean, I know
up until now it seems so.
Yeah, I guess so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you think about the conversation that the four are having? I know they only get bits and pieces of it, but obviously they're plotting and quibbling amongst themselves.
What do you guys think about the fact that Mogedion is watching rather than participating?
Or we just, yeah.
Well, why do you think that would be the case?
She's the least trusted of the bunch, and she's the least powerful.
Do you think it has anything to do with power? Do you think it all has to do with, like, standing?
Standing.
If it was Well, no, if it was standing, she'd be more overt with it. She's being covert with it. I have intentionally declined to be part of certain meetings, but I have intentionally sat close enough to a door where I can hear what's going on. And
see,
knowledge,
that's a really interesting point. Yeah.
Knowledge is power. Knowing what their moves are, so you can remember. Well, remember, why am I lecturing you? You know more than me about this. But like the vibe we're getting right now, all the Forsaken, they're not working towards the same end goal. Or maybe they are, but they're all being selfish about it and that they want to be the last man standing. So everybody's playing against everybody. Exactly. And so Lanfear has the strategy of she's a people person, damn it. Why can't you see that? So she works the relationships like one-on-one and she plays people against each other. She plays Forsaken against each other. And she's trying to get Ranthead and Matt's head.
Less about about Lanfear and more about Mogheedian. And
right,
do you think that she goes the same thing?
But no, Mogadine's strategy is more the I just want to see what everybody else is doing so I can work my plan on that.
That's so
like
cool.
She can work her plan around that. Like she doesn't risk running into any of them head on. She's able to do her thing and let them kind of fight amongst themselves.
Well, I mean, like you said, the spider, right? She's trying to pull people into the trap. And then we see the other four who are having a very direct approach. Like they have a plan. Yeah. Now they're talking about a he. They don't specifically state Rand, but we can assume.
Yeah, because they mentioned he has a teacher now, which is
right. Right. Obviously, yes.
And it's like, yeah, he's got a teacher now. Is, you know, he may not be worth much, but he's giving him something. So, like, who's our bait is the first question. Is that the one with the queen? What is that man's name?
Ravine.
So, like, we know that the focus for Rand
is on up on me. I was at Ravine.
And so, with the focus being on Ravine, we now have the other three, like, having the opportunity to take advantage of that situation and really jump him. I mean, that's really what it is. You bait tactic and then you jump. You lure him in, and once he's surrounded, you take him out. And we know the other one has the capacity. He's got the 13. So he Samuel. Can... Yeah, Ishmael has the 13.
You saw Samuel.
Or Samuel, yeah. Mm-hmm. So he has the power to essentially control Rand. Mm-hmm. So that's really the goal, is they want to use the power of the 13 to shift Rand to the dark side.
Yeah,
except Elaine's going to find a way to bind themselves to him remotely with her newly formed Tarangrials that gives Rand more power than he should when he faces the 13, and they're going to be surprised at the fact that he's able to overcome, but it's because he has help.
It would be a Songreal because it's so powerful.
It's so powerful. Okay, yeah. I always these angry Aiels throw me off all the time.
Yeah. So after this scene, they don't stay long because obviously they don't want to be spotted by five Forsaken because that would be disastrous. Rightfully so. So Brigitte pulls them back to the wagons.
So I mean, we now have a greater concept of what they're trying to do. Like, it's bait tactic. Mm-hmm. We know it works well. We know that Rand's headed in that direction. We know he doesn't exactly have a full-on plan put together. We know he doesn't have the mystical protection that he needs. We know that he's got all the physical protection he needs. But unless he can learn how to combat women channeling,
he's got to team up with somebody.
He's got to. And like, what do you do if you're in his place?
Yeah.
Now, here's the other thought. Because there's another character that we've been sleeping on for a while. Matt.
I ain't sleeping on him.
I just don't know what the fuck he's going to do.
He's been sleeping on Matt. There's no way.
I've been thinking like, okay, so Matt now has this plethora. Is that the right word? Plethora of knowledge?
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The plethora of knowledge.
Indubitably.
As an English major, I'll say you are
inconceivable.
He's got a spear like no other, so he can pokey with the
It ain't no short spear.
We didn't do that.
The tip is
please huge. Let this be a normal field trip. The with tip the frizz? Is huge. No way.
The tip is huge. The tip is huge. Yeah. A really big tip.
And then he's got a talisman that we know at least protects him from
female channelers.
Mm-hmm. Will it protect him against all is the question. What I really would like for him to do
is
to have Rand shoot a small little something at him. Like,
wait a minute.
Just a little something at Matt just to see.
If it does not protect him against male channelers, then Robert Jordan fucked up. Because Rand said, I'm done with Aes Sedai. He didn't say female Aes Sedai. Yeah, he said, I'm done with Aes Sedai. I don't want him.
Which would have been back in the day, both genders, right. You're saying.
And they gave him something that would protect him from Aes Sedai.
Mm-hmm.
And that's male and female.
Yeah.
So.
I want the theory tested.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
What I can see happening is them getting the jump on Rand and Matt saving Rand.
Okay.
Yeah, right when Rand is about to die, you hear, down, can't touch this, down. And Matt comes in with parachute pants with that little shuffle dance and then hits him with the tip.
Who's going to die? Which one of the Forsaken is going to die?
I mean, all of them eventually, except Lanfear. Lanfear marries Rand.
Well, I mean, all have a life expectancy of 80, according to Aiden.
Yeah. So after all this, like I said, Brookie takes her back away, and they're talking about, like, well, at least no one saw us. And as soon as she says that, it's like, you mean we didn't see you? Turns around, and it's Mageddon right there.
Yeah. She's like, Grendel that threw me completely for a loop too when I read that.
Right.
It's like Lanfear was the one hit. She's like going through the different people. And then you hear in the background, Grendel, I said that all wrong, is devious.
Grendel.
Voice said, but not devious enough. And Brigitte didn't even have time. I love this scene. It's like, Brigitte world, silver bow coming up, silver arrow almost flying to notch, and abruptly hurling 30 paces through the moonlight to crash against Nynaeve's wagon so hard that she had bounced 5 and lay in a crumpled heap. She reacted like that, and that's how quick Mogadyn reacted as well. She literally tossed this warrior to the side.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the arrow, F it. It's not
doing anything to
me. And then at the same time, she's already blocked, shielded Nynaeve, because Nynaeve goes to try to.
Real skill. Like, I really thought she was much less of a person or a channeler. Mm-hmm. But to be able to.
The spider. Remember, she wasn't just looking down, she knew what was looking at her. In order for her to do what she did, including blocking Nynaeve, she had to see it ahead of time. It wasn't she turned around, saw it, and they both went after the power at the same time. Now, Mogadyn turned around already knowing what her moves were. She knew what was happening to her.
Mm-hmm.
I know the book doesn't say that, but there's no other way she could have had a jump like that.
Yeah.
And even if it were the case, I had other questions. Just hammer her into the ground, and she would never have gotten away, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whether it be that I feel the ship coming while I'm sailing because I let the hairs grow out of the back of my neck and she anticipated it, or maybe she set all of this up, or maybe she knows that Brigitte has been following her and she's waiting for that moment that Brigitte brought somebody else with her to make it happen. But this was a trap. This was a spider trap. That's what I feel.
The hairs in the back of your neck, you know, like when you're sailing in the middle of the night and it's completely pitch black and all of a sudden like that shiver comes across.
So you know to adjust the sails
hits. That you know that the storm's coming, you don't even see it yet. Like there's a squall coming. Like you'll be sailing pitch black and all of a sudden you shiver. It's like ring the bell, all hands on deck, real fast.
Wake up everybody, and they get up and they're like, nothing's going on, and you're like, it's about to.
About to go just, down.
Yeah. Everybody get ready. Yep. So
that's just how I feel with you guys at this point when I'm like floundering with you. So
when you're fondling with us,
that too. I said floundering, but yeah, fondling as well. I mean, damn.
So just so you know, the first time Alan was like, hey, let's do Zoom, Chris and I did, we backed the camera up so it was full body shots. But because Alan said we couldn't post the fondling, we only do from the nipples up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and that's why.
What
that's
a cutoff? Nipples up? That is, well, like,
that's why Chris, you only see,
censorship.
Yeah. You only see Chris's head because he can't stop touching his nipples. Right now,
yeah,
he is nipple touching.
I'm
oh, now I'm touching my own nipples. And, like, does that disqualify me from my own? Like, damn.
All right, Alan, where are we at?
All right. So, yeah. So Brigitte gets thrown against the wagon. Nynaeve gets shielded. And
fucked up. Yeah.
Then they have this conversation where Mageddon's just like, I could kill you, but that won't be fun.
Semicolon, yeah. However, comma.
Yeah.
Not finished yet.
Yeah, it won't be fun. I have other plans for you. And then starts talking about, you know, making her into a horse and all this other great stuff. And, you know,
riding her until she becomes glue.
Mm-hmm.
So
pretty much.
So first time reader, we're at this point. All the thoughts rushing through my head. One, can't stand Morgideon. Like, and the more, or whatever her name is, the more she speaks, the more it just frustrates me. And then I'm angry at myself because I thought for a moment with their last interaction that Nynaeve could totally overpower her, no big deal. But did Nynaeve get lucky, or was that allowed to happen for, like, future strategical purposes?
Oh, and she then I.
Well, I think the first time Mageddon was caught a little off guard. This time she's completely prepared.
So. Yeah, totally prepared. And then Nynaeve, I'm thinking, why did you not, like, how were you so full of yourself that you didn't listen to the wise one saying, you have no fucking clue what you're doing here?
Yeah.
Like, and if you run into somebody who knows what they're doing, so the wise ones could just, they could change clothes on somebody, no big deal, but they can manipulate, no big deal. These guys, and like, I would think that everybody should assume, what's her name? Mageddon.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody should assume that she's able to manipulate things better in the dream world or wherever the fuck they are, better than the wise ones, because she's been doing it for so long. She's forsaken. She's amazing. Anyways, Nynaeve was just very naive mm-hmm. in thinking that she could even approach her in this realm and have a chance. And she had plenty of warning. People try to warn her, the wise ones, even though they're cocky, they try to warn her. So I'm pissed at Nynaeve too. And yeah. It's just so much about this situation. I'm disappointed. I'm angry. I'm like, I'm a problem solver. I want to fix it, but I don't even fucking know how. Like,
yeah,
this is where I start to, I mentioned earlier where, like, I got emotional about it. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, one of our characters is actually fucked.
Yeah.
Like, there's no good way out of this.
Yeah.
So anyways.
But then Brigitte starts to stir behind her. And that's when
Nynaeve did they know.
Yeah. Nynaeve keeps Mageddon talking as, and I think Mageddon's about to, like, I guess, lay a weave or do something to her. And then all of a sudden, you know, the arrow blossomed out of her chest as Brigitte fired. Missed the heart.
Got her.
Didn't kill her though.
It was an assumption that Brigitte may be dead or maybe severely injured.
Mm-hmm.
And when she put that arrow right through her, I thought, yes, finally, another one bites the dust. Goodbye, Forsaken. Mm-hmm. Like, that was my first instinct. You see right away, like, all of her, you know, calm goes away. Her weaves go away. We have power flowing through the system again. And you just think, all right, we're going to handle her right now. Like, this is the end. All of a sudden, she just up and goes.
Yeah, she runs. Wait, please.
She's out of there. Who did the first arrow go through?
First one?
Yeah.
The very, very first one?
All right, somebody open their book because I put mine down because my eyes aren't working because I'm drunk.
Oh, no. Look at him asking us to open the book.
I thought, and okay, I could be way off. I've been really distracted. I thought her first arrow hit Nynaeve.
No, I don't think so.
No? Okay, so imagine that. So her first arrow hit Mogadishu.
Yeah.
Mogadishu.
Yeah. I always said Mageddon because Mageddon. I just didn't know dick about pronunciation.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, not gonna lie.
I think it is Mageddon, but Kramer
score and, for 12-year-old David. God damn.
Kramer and Redding pronounce it.
Score for 12-year-old David. Hot damn.
Okay. I thought. Okay. Well, that changes the way I was thinking about this. So we breezed over it, but the things. Mageddon was telling Nynaeve and how she was going to control her and what she was going to do. I thought the first shot was to Nynaeve, and I thought it was kind of one of those you know, mercy shots, not necessarily a mercy kill because she wasn't trying to kill her, but she was trying to do something enough to break the compulsion, break her free from what was going on. But apparently I'm wrong in that.
Yeah, because they were about to lay down some compulsion.
Like literally, that was the next step. Like,
what would have been right if not, is basically. Right. And don't feel wrong because, or don't feel bad because that's literally how tons of fans felt for a lot of years.
David, I've been wrong about so much shit my entire life. Being wrong,
feels normal. All right, so maybe you guys haven't actually gone back, and the two of you, like, this has nothing to do with spoilers as far as like what you guys have already done. Have you guys never gone back, and the two of you just assessed what you got right?
Oh, so we've harassed Alan a couple times.
Because it has been an absurd percentage. Like, I think even tracked, there's at least one steak dinner. There is also a very vague, you can do what you want to me thing that we need to discuss later that happened earlier on.
That's that Jordicon, baby.
Right. So, like, there's very clearly, like, all right, there's more to this than meets the eye.
We're saving the price. Look, if Tom and Moraine actually even just kiss one time, swear to God, Alan is gonna wine and dine Chris for a week straight.
Why am I?
Look at that. That's a promise, Chris. You hear that?
Why not Ian wine and dine?
Oh, I'm gonna be there too. But Chris heard wine and dine.
He's just immediately like booking the most expensive restaurants.
Anyways,
yeah.
All right, so she didn't shoot Nynaeve. That actually changes things in my head.
But yeah, but
still pretty cool.
Mogedion's wounded. She flees. Nynaeve wakes up crying, thinking that Brigitte's dead.
He said thinking that Brigitte is dead. Alan just spoiled us.
No, what I was going to say is we don't know what happened to Brigitte. Yeah. Just think about it. She has been part of the pattern, and all of a sudden she's ripped from it. What do you guys think that means for her?
Mm.
We don't know how she was removed. We know that if she was finger blasted, it erases her.
Basically, like her finger blasting moved her away from the natural progression of just like being born or whatever.
Mm.
So she's very much like, I am not on my right path. What's happening? Like,
she's got to find a way back or else she'll be reborn just something different.
Or maybe this time she comes back, but now she's to be older than her boy toy.
But remember, she's like
kind of mixing it up.
I mean, based on what we see, like, we're talking like anywhere from 25 to 35, just because women are awesome. So, like,
but 30, but waiting into when you translate,
she's
that
just
to
like
waiting
a really awesome blonde.
Year,
that's all we
that's
know.
Kind of
she's
like,
just really
you know,
badass 30, blonde. That's all we know.
Yeah.
So, anything from all this before we switch point of views?
No.
So read the book. We grazed over it. The interaction between Nynaeve and Mogedion, and then Brigitte saving the day, and Nynaeve weeping over the bow. It's all very intense. Like I said, I was totally sober when I listened to it and then read it, and that's one of the more emotional parts of the books that I've read so far.
Yeah.
So
and the section really fits in with what Ian was just saying. I mean, think about it, because we've established that Nynaeve, based on like by their own interactions, Nynaeve and Mogedion are on par with each other. So whatever Mogedion can do, if Nynaeve is watching it, she's got a decent chance doing it, because remember her power, like her super like special power is she sees something.
She can
replicate it.
Anything you can
so
do.
So she better. Watches someone who has so much more experience than her do things. So yes, Nynaeve is literally the only like response to an actual Forsaken at that point, which is really interesting.
Yeah. She just has to get an edge on them. Like, yeah.
Right. And that's shown in this chapter when Mogedion wraps her the fuck up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Chaos here.
All right.
He's like,
else?
I got the drop on you. So
yeah. So anything else we missed?
Oh, do you think that the plan of the other Forsaken that Magi is watching, the plan to link together to overpower Rand, do you think that has any chance of succeeding? Or do you think that they are just gonna fight too much?
Yes.
Yes.
I think
as of right now, yes.
Yeah. I definitely think it could indeed succeed. the issue is going to be the balance struggle, power struggle after the fact.
Right. I've always felt that this is a very interesting series where, like, unlike Harry Potter, where you are given, like, an example of where the power comes from the enemy.
So I feel like right now, Rand, so one, their plan could totally work, but it's mostly because Rand is still in this mode of, I know more, I know better. There's something he read when he was in Tyr, whatever. And he's still going it alone. He's not really sharing his plan with anybody. He's not really trusting anybody. But if Rand can bring more people into his circle of trust, then he definitely has a great chance. He might get lucky with this Tavirinness that all these people work for his benefit, even though he's not trusting them. But that's a stretch. Could happen, but Rand can't do it by himself yet. We're not at the last book where maybe he can, but now he needs more people to be able to defend himself. He's not there.
I just want to say, like, maybe this has been brought up, like, to a lesser extent before, but I just want to say, like, maybe in a way to bridge this, like, Chris, I've never heard someone who, like, knows high fantasy able to give, like, such well, like, everything that you say comes from a place of obvious intellect and experience. Whereas someone like Ian, nothing doesn't come from intellect experience. It totally does. But it's coming from a whole different wall of experience. It's like if you read, this is going to be really weird. I was in a really weird experience where I got to read Wheel of Time. At the same time, I read Lord of the Rings. And at the same time, I had an older brother who was a veteran. An old brother who was the brother of a veteran, and they both made me read it. And it was basically like I got to understand it from both the subject of the soldier and the civilian. And they really hardcore made me learn that. And they're both 20 plus years older than I am. And I thank them every day for that. And it's one of those things where it just made me realize how different cultures are. And I don't know.
Perspective is.
Exactly.
Like life experiences are. And this might be the, Alan, we can move on after this. This might be the first time I've said it, but like, well, I have somewhat of a, military experience that affects my perspective. Chris. I have a very unique military experience that very few people have. I live vicariously through a lot of other people, especially in my chaplain assistant years. In what I do now, it's so totally different. But I also work closely enough with those people that we talked about a lot early on when Alan was preaching about Jordan's military experience and how it might have affected the way he wrote and his perspective on things. Mm-hmm. So while I can see a lot of the similarities and a lot of the things he draws from that experience, even I am looking at it from the third person, or not third person, but vicariously through other people's experiences. And I appreciate it, but it's not always because I've been there, done that. It's because I know people that have been there, done that. So you having the family, if they've talked to you about it, could be a very similar, you know, perspective from what I have.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. So moving on to this. Moving on to this last part, Leandrin. Leandrin. It's Lynn's point of view. A wounded, bleeding Mageddon comes into the bedroom, running. She demands Chesmal, who's a yellow, really yellow.
Heal me now.
Yeah. To heal her. And Chesmal does. Heals her.
But disappointing.
What did you say?
That was very disappointing.
Oh, it sounds like Chris would have been in Leandrin's camp.
I 100%. I'm not going to lie to you.
There's no excuse for being in Leandrin's camp, but you go ahead and make your point, Chris.
The first thing I thought was, no, you think about it from the perspective of not just Leandrin, but hold on, hear me out. So I'm with my boys, and we're promised the fortune. We're promised fame and glory, and we're going to get it. And then in walks Putin, and he's like, hey, you ain't getting it. It's all mine.
I'm going to just go take shit.
What would you do? Hopefully your boys would stop him.
All right. I'll say this.
I do so successfully.
Can I say? No, can I say something?
Like what you do legally, and then what happens in your instincts.
Maybe my negative judgment towards Leandrin stems from my insomnia and the amount of time I've spent watching Discovery Channel late at night. It sounds random, but hear me out. No, not History Channel.
The Lions.
Thank you.
The Lionesses.
Leandrin, she made the mistake of trying to get a coalition of people to help her overtake Magideon after she had her ass slapped and beat around and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned Lions, Chris, and those late night Discovery Channel shows when I'm trying to sleep and it's like the lion's about to get taken out. Do you know when the lion, is the most vicious? It's not when he's the most powerful and best fed.
That lion is there to kill you. You know that, right? That lion is there to kill you.
That last moment, the last fight that a lion gives when he hasn't been eating well, he knows he's the outcast, he knows he's about to go down. There is no fucking lion that has ever just laid down, looked at the next lion to take his place and said, go ahead and clamp my throat.
But do you know why the lions often won?
No, but when they're injured, when they're down and out, when everybody else is counting them out, I've watched the videos, they lose their fucking mind. Their last fight is their best goddamn fight ever.
I actually have read Isuzu last testimonies that were written, and came down to shoving their fist in a lion's mouth. Literally all of them.
The last ditch effort of a fighter.
And some of them grab the tongue, twist it, and pull.
Yes. But so to that point, the last ditch effort of a fighter.
Exactly. Yes.
Mogadine, we look at her as a spider and she's working behind the scenes. But when it comes down to it, push comes to shove, this woman's going to fight.
Yeah. But like,
and
yeah,
Leandrin trying to take her on one on one. Leandrin's like,
and then what happened to Leandrin afterwards? Goes, because I'm that give is it all relevant. I got.
I'm
because I actually want to talk about this. The only reason I want to talk about this like this is because I feel like as a podcast, we get distracted by the openings and the endings. But I want to actually talk about the central part where they go to Leandrin.
You want to talk about the meat?
Yeah, we're talking about the meat here. Where Maggie is all like, you fucking heal me right now or I'm dying. And they're like, okay, we're fucking healing you. Calm down. She's just like, oh my God, I can't believe she did this to me. And then everyone's like, are you sure? Are you sure? You know Luce Theron's back. Like, are you really surprised?
For me, it was more along the lines of like, this is your usurper. This is the person who is taking your glory, taking your potential, you know, awesomeness, the money, the power, the fame. Like, here she has served you on a silver platter. Like, you can just let her bleed out.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to do anything.
You're right.
Hold on. But
none of them would have the conscience to do that.
Chris.
Or lack thereof.
In saying this, I'm going to compliment you. And I know this isn't who you are, but let's just look at where we are physically, right?
Uh-huh.
Let's say you took over the Wheel Reeds and I was pissed about it and blah, blah, blah. And I'm Leandrin and you're Mogadine, right?
Uh-huh.
If you were bleeding out from a severe wound, but you still had enough in you for one more good punch, one more good squeeze, one more good fuck you up, what chance do I have? Even if I'm in my prime, I have none.
No. But as far as scientific is concerned, no.
It's just
as far as
easy,
blood in the water is concerned, no.
It's
you're fucked.
Just
you're
as
right.
easy to for those women to have done nothing. Like she needed to. She
it would
needed
require
to be
running away and let right. her and yeah. let her fizzle out.
Exactly.
But even being in the same room and making a decision to do nothing puts you at risk. If I'm in the same room as you and you are going to make your last ditch effort to survive, I'm at risk. My best effort is to not fucking be there. So I think Leandrin misread this.
Like, oh, you need me to heal you? Sure, I'll heal you. Yeah. I would lay hands on you and I would have increased the size of that.
No, that's what Leandrin tries to do. She,
but that was after
she was
healed.
Now, what do you guys think?
But others weren't ready to help her though, Alan. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I actually had a question about all of this.
Hit it.
What do you guys think? Like, so clearly the Forsaken are nothing compared to our girls from Edmonds Field. So basically always great to see like a comparison where like everyone is just cowering for Magidian. And then, you know, Nynaeve is like, yeah, I beat that bitch once, I'll beat her again.
And even like, and even when Nynaeve was
she crosses my path, whatever.
Yeah, no, it's very heartfelt. Even when Nynaeve was losing to her, she was talking smack. Like, it makes me feel good.
And it had nothing to do with power. It had everything to do with training. And you got that from the argument.
Oh, true. True.
Mm-hmm. Because Valgadian is an ancient, ancient being. Whereas Nynaeve just learned her powers basically yesterday. So to match against somebody who knows their shit, it's like, oh, okay.
I just know, look. I just know people in survival mode. Chris has shown nothing but love to me. I've got nothing but love for him. But if I was in a room with Chris and he was last ditch, like he had to survive, he had to give it all he has, on my best day, I would be in a lot of trouble.
Well, right. Because in order to like, you and I would have the same factor where like, in order to like jab like a pin into his jugular, we'd have to jump like 6 inches in the air to do
it. But his reach has me. I'd never make it. I'd be 6 inches short.
Right. I mean, like we're
and he would stop me. Right.
Like so, you're 5'7", I'm 5'8". We're in the same boat here.
Let me put this out there. Anybody who thinks Leandrin had a chance and was making a good decision, go ahead and email us at thewheelreads.com
that literally is a person who's like, I worked at a school and I feel like I can handle the monkey debit. That's what that was.
If people want to make that argument, I will personally engage you on any of those platforms. It's not to argue, it's just I want to know maybe there is a justification for what Leandrin
did. Alan, we have to actually talk about this because maybe there's actually a market being made for like people who like pretend to be talking about Wheel of Time.
I'm saying, had those three actually decided to work cohesively, do you think, Ian, that they may have won? In the moment where she absolutely came back, but she's bleeding out.
But that conversation and that agreement and that trust would have happened, needed to happen before. So, yes, if they were all on the same page before.
To escape. Yes, but by the time, yeah,
by the time Leandrin made her move, she already saw someone to attempt to heal. She had not built any trust. She hadn't built any coalitions with anybody. She was all on her own there.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I would not. I've come across a sorry for people that love animals, but it happens in nature. We didn't make this happen, but I came across a raccoon that was older and starving. I could see the ribs on it. This was at my dad's house, and we'd have to deal with raccoons and possums before, and this particular one, because he was so sickly and struggling so much, everyone was like, this will be easy. And I was like, no, this is the one you need to fucking watch out for. This is the one that will leap at your face in the last second and claw your fucking eyes out. And I wasn't wrong. Nobody lost an eye, but because of my warning, that raccoon was subdued. They're just, I don't know. I keep going back to it. Leandrin did not watch Discovery Channel late at night.
She missed the perfect opportunity. Because they hadn't had a game plan put together to begin with. Going back to the original statement, I just had hoped.
Yeah.
There was hope.
Sure. I will say that, like,
do you guys think about the punishment? You know, wraps her up in weaves and ties her so intricate of a knot that she'll never be able to channel.
I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Avienda right away, might like, be down with it. That's all I'm saying.
I knew right away that was going to happen.
She's a hair puller. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
I mean, clearly she like likes that.
So here's my other thought. Who do we know that has now begun to understand the intricacies of weaving?
Cool.
The one that thinks that she could maybe build a Songreel or Tongreel. Or
so Elaine, but she's not the only one, but specifically recently.
Right now, Elaine.
So I actually had a quick question for you guys about that. Do you think that it was incredibly stupid for Nynaeve to follow Birgitta into the World of Dreams in that last time where Birgitta was kind of just murked? Or do you think that she was just basically following what needed to be done?
Nynaeve did what
she was going to do, right?
What she was going to do in this situation. Okay. Like I said it before, I wish, and I'll take Chris's, but there was hope that maybe she would listen to the wise ones, that she would take warning, but we knew she wasn't.
Basically,
she's still learning that humility. She's still learning what we know as the reader, that she actually has, as powerful as she is, she has a longer path
right.
to reach her potential that many of these other characters do. And
not
she's
to
just,
mention the
she's
fact
just
that,
not
like,
figuring it out.
Right. And not to mention the fact that, like, once she gets back to, like, her, like, cronies, you just have Mugetti and just having her people heal her, teach her about her enemy. Like, okay, what am I missing? All right, teach me. Just like a Gundam pilot for, like, you know, my, like, more nerdy friends. It's very interesting, I thought.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then after Mugetti leaves, she tries to plead with the other two girls to show, like, you know, about her, you know.
Yeah.
Her cause, and they're right. like, no, you can't even channel anymore. You're pretty much like still like you're nothing anymore. Bye.
Yeah.
It was too late, too little, too late.
I think what we're gonna see is that she's going to fall in line somewhere at some point in time with Elaine.
Okay.
Interesting.
Hmm.
I like that.
I think if anybody would be Elaine, that will like, well, I can see how your weaves flow, and I can see where this how the shielding's put together, and let me piece this out. Let me work this out. Let me undo it, because we're going to create some type of an alliance here.
Mm-hmm.
I see Egwene getting pushed to Amarylin. I see Nynaeve learning to overcome her block through the kung fu skills of the chick in the menagerie. And I have nothing to base that on other than that would be cool.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Shoulder shrug.
Yeah. I don't know.
He didn't even say, sure. Just said, I don't know. Apparently, I'm way off.
Yeah.
Did it make you feel any better? I actually, like, started to tell myself I shouldn't say sure. So, like, I would have been saying sure about every sentence you said. I'd be like, sure. You're like, I need to focus on this. I'd be like, sure.
In Alan's spreadsheet, by this book, he was like, I need to stop saying sure and start saying I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I taught myself to only say sure in the Discord or let me know.
You can't just say read it and find out. That might be tough.
Yeah, no. Like, literally, that would be make for a tarot podcast.
Yeah, so Leandra got the smackdown. But I'm of the camp that she got what she deserved. Just poor decision making. She thought she had more power individually, and she thought she had more influence with the group, and she was wrong about both.
So we end this chapter with Mugetti and then turning to the other two and saying, you know, as a menagerie they're in, go ahead and try to find every single one that's, you know, and we'll find them that way. So
anyway,
they're now going to be searching through any of the traveling circuses, which there can't be that many of them. So
doesn't matter, because our menagerie folk have already decided that perhaps they should leave the menagerie.
Yeah. But
yeah. So who wins out? Which happens first?
Exactly.
Read it. Find
what
out.
A good question.
Yeah.
I'm having fun.
And that's how we end with actually with Leandrin screaming, but yeah.
Oh man. Also, my last question for you guys that is just general for these chapters. Do you think that Rand accepting going like, I want this spear point as my scepter? Do you think it has anything to do with his madness, or do you think he's just like rolling with the punches?
So
the only reason I ask that, because he's had previous things where like things have come up for him, and he's just been like, no. So like I'm just wondering, like, where do you personally draw the line?
Do you got an answer, Chris? I kind of feel like I should let you go first. I've been dominating.
I feel like this question has never actually been answered, and like I think it's fun.
You're fine. So like when it comes to him using this as a scepter, I think it's part of that shift in ideology where he realizes the softness that he gave the Shanshan may come back to bite him, and that spear is going to be the reminder. And then I also think that the spear may also come up in the future with the Shanshan when they see that, okay, he has this for some reason, and maybe it has a connection to an important general, or maybe this you know, priestess or maybe the royal person has, you know, a greater stake in things. So maybe cool. That will have a tie there. So that's kind of where my mind was with that. And then I just want to bring up the point that you made earlier, Ian, about people in power thinking that they're greater than what they are. We now have two former Aes Sedai who were kicked out of their high places, and now they're really being put into their proper place, which goes to show that the towers have been broken for a very long time.
And their power's been weak.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And what's really funny is about that, like, it's fun to see, like, oh yeah, their powers are weak, whatever. It's like, yeah, but like, I'm doing Boy Scout shit, and like, those troops are like doing something.
Yeah.
It's like a whole thing where it's like, yeah, we just really love you guys, and we're just pretending to care. We're Troop 48. And I'm like, it's my job to go through and be like, do you actually care about this, or are you just claiming numbers? And so I actually have, in the last 2 months, I actually have completely condensed a lot of unit data so that they want things that were basically what we'd call
unit just
like
data
nerd things rather than just like, hey, it's so and so, it's so and so dot com. But yeah, I just like hardcore that. Yeah,
well, anyway.
Sorry, Alan.
No, so like you're in that ramble, there's a little bit of like actual truth to what's going on, or what was going on in the White Tower. Like, we knew they were desperate, might not be the word for numbers, but we knew it was hard.
They were desperate for numbers. Yes.
So they were bringing people in that, yeah, they could kind of channel, but where they clearly were not Aes Sedai what Aes Sedai were for the past. Like, over time, it's become watered down. So that might be some to your point. So to answer your question, as far as Rand just accepting what's thrown at him, I don't know what his rationale is, but looking at the big picture, I think it's awesome. And I think it's necessary for Rand to be able to take whatever's thrown at him and to be able to roll with it. Because in the grand scheme of things, if Rand is the one,
I'd just be tickling you for like, you know, a response. So like, you're like, God damn it, I already did this.
But if Rand's the one, he has to realize, kind of like how Neo realized in the Matrix. Like,
you're
at
right.
some point,
you're right about that.
If I have supreme control on everything that's happening around me, it doesn't matter what you throw at me, I will either turn it into a shield, a weapon, or a fucking joke. And I don't think Rand's there yet mentally. But I'd like to see the transition, like, as he gets to that. Like, yeah, sure. Yeah, I want somebody to shoot balefire at Rand and him absorb it like Yoda does, and then shoot the ball back at him.
He, like, draws his hand back and goes, no, and just throws lightning.
Right, and have ultimate control
just
over that.
Episode two's his ass.
Yeah. Let's not even talk about the lightsaber fight with Dooku, because let's be honest, if you were in theaters on opening night, everybody shit there.
Also, fucking like, amazing. Luckily for me, like in the like literally 5 years after that, I actually took a fencing class that like was taught by a guy who was like a bronze medalist fencist at University of South Carolina, and it was fucking awesome, and I had a blast. However, it just basically taught me that like, every like high fantasy novel, there's just a lot of bullshit that's just snuck in, and like they don't know how to fence. It's like, all right, cool. So we're just gonna move on from that. Which just basically mean like Wheel of Time, which is like, yeah, lots of fans. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Wait, so people that fence are fences, just like people who play the piano are pianists?
Fencers is officially the thing, but it's so uncommon that like it doesn't matter, because mostly the people who fence are the people who are just dumping whatever on.
Well, just so y'all know, Alan is a pianist.
Oh, and here's the thing. I actually knew he was at least a pianist. Very, very, very talented producer. In the fact that like having multiple things wasn't going to fuck him over. So,
well, I guess going to wrap everything up. Thank you, David, so much for coming on. This has been fun. This has been good chapters.
The most fun I've had in weeks.
Yeah, it's been good times. So, favorite characters.
Let me go first. Mogadine.
Not Avienda. Nope. After all that, after the igloo sex.
Nope. Mogadine. She's
the fact that she's watching. That made an impact, ladies and gents.
She's watching who she wants to watch, but maybe it was just total setup so she could get the watchers watching the watcher. Like she was many moves ahead.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
you have to.
Just I well. Agree, but I'm just surprised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What about you, Chris?
I would have to agree with you on the Mogadine being, you know.
Oh wow.
Baller, but.
That's fair. I like your butts.
I like yours too.
Yeah.
Chris has to acknowledge like how easy it was for her to just manhandle Nynaeve when she got the drop on her. And what does that mean for if you don't?
I think that the other person who I really, again, Avienda definitely surprised me with her mastery and control of the power to be able to take on two trained. Mind you, she got the jump on him, so there's that. Like
the confidence, sneak
attack, but the confidence was there, and no the skill doubt. Was there, and it just makes me feel so much better about the fact that she is the one there protecting Rand, and you know, out of the three sister wives, like she definitely is willing and able to do what needs to be done.
Okay. That's a great pick.
There you go.
That would have been a tied for first for me. I wouldn't even say second, but tied for first.
Actually, yeah. I have like a decent question in case that came up, but yeah, it wasn't even relevant.
Yeah. So next time we'll be doing three chapters again, 35, 36, 37, and the chapter titles are Ripped Away, A New Name, and Performances in Samara.
I actually have one last thing to say before we close out.
Sure.
Actually, we'll two say. Last things. One is just, I love you guys. You guys have been the best podcasts I've encountered, regardless of medium. So there's a reason I'm at the level of, you know, patron that I am. And I just hope you guys just, you know, don't quit. You have the audience. Don't
My
quit.
Life is okay. so boring.
It's like the same.
All I have.
So. I love you guys. Love Run you guys. It, bro. You guys yeah. are the best.
Thank you so much. Well, how you can found us at The Wheel Reads on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, all those great places. You can also find us by emailing us at thewheelreads@gmail.com or go to our website at www.thewheelreads.com. Find all sorts of links to fun stuff like merchandise, our Discord server, which is awesome, and our Patreon to help support us. So buy merch, become a patron, all good things. And just listen to us because we do love all of our listeners. So keep it up, and that's all I got, guys.
Until next time.
Hey, love you.
Okay, bye.
I hope you enjoyed the show, and thank you for listening to The Wheel Reads. See y'all next time.
Welcome to The Wheel Reads, a Wheel of Time podcast. Your hosts are Alan, Chris, and Ian. This podcast is safe for first-time readers with no spoilers. This week, we'll be covering chapters 35, 36, and 37 of The Fires of Heaven, Ripped Away, A New Name, and Performances in Samara. Enjoy!